Well, it depends which clock you're looking at.
Yeah.
I'm showing 1 o'clock.
You
I,
show,
think that, I think that clock's wrong.
Oh, yeah, I show 101, too. Okay. So, yeah, you're good to go.
Let's go ahead and fire up.
Yeah.
Okay, let's call the task force to order. It is May 17th, right at 1 o'clock. Welcome, everybody. Glad to have you all here on a bright, sunny day. You know, one thing, they always put the the little tissues in front of me.
This will make you cry.
Oh, well, okay. I thought, well, maybe.
Expecting tomatoes.
I don't know.
I thought
there was
cry.
So,
abuse.
Yeah, before we do anything, we need Paul to.
Good debate.
Everybody's
today.
Looking at Paul.
Uh-huh.
So, Paul, quickly explain what happened to the other guy so you could tell really quickly what happened.
The other guy was a big, bad parking lot.
He had a fall in a parking lot, and the parking lot won.
So, oh, goodness.
Yeah. He said he.
Nuts are unyielding.
Yeah. So,
could have been worse.
Could have been worse. Could have been a lot worse. So let's go around the room with introductions, and let's start with Mr. Martin here.
I am Jim Martin, fish biologist here from Oregon.
Hi, my name is Kenji Sugihara. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Bicycle Racing Association, also an Oregon Tourism Commissioner.
Scott Welch, Columbia Sportswear.
Chris Taylor, one of the conservation reps.
Merrill Reddish, another conservation rep.
Mark Labhart, and I have the privilege of being the chair of the Tillamook County Board of Commissioners.
Claire Pucci, retired from various positions in wildlife and conservation.
Paul Don Hefner, Oregon Hunters Association.
Carrie Westland, Travel Lane County.
Mike Herbel, hunting and fishing advocate.
Rob Morrison, Loophole and Stevens.
Chris Edwards, State Senator from Eugene.
Gert Melcher, Director of Department of Fish and Wildlife.
And on the phone, who do we have on the phone? Great. The one more time on the second one. Okay, let's try. And yeah, we're having trouble hearing, I think, Beth. Was that you, Rob, that?
Yes.
Okay, how are you feeling?
I'm amazing.
Rob's pretty sick, so it's probably good that he didn't come today. So, and then we had a second person. I don't think I caught your name, the second one. After Nancy. So it's only Nancy and Rob?
Wayne.
Wayne. Great. Glad to have you here, Representative. Okay, in the back of the room.
Thomas Coleman, Marketing Associates with Sammy Pearl.
Okay, welcome.
Lena Spadassini, Oregon Wild.
John Goodell, Wildlife Society, Oregon Chapter Wildlife Society.
Fergus McLean, resident of Plain County.
Scott Jorgensen, Chief of Staff, Oregon State Senator Doug Whitson, Senate District 28.
John C. Warren, Oregon Fish and Wildlife Fish Division.
Carl Bentley,
former.
Jim Meyer.
Will Woolley, Chief of Oregon.
Bob Olson, Representative.
Okay, I think we've captured everybody. So we got a couple housekeeping items, and Beth's going to cover those before we do public comment.
Just a couple things. One is a reminder that Mark is going to be briefing the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee at this meeting next Tuesday. It's going to be the first item on the agenda. It shows differently if you look at the committee agenda. This is going to be first up. So that'll be right at 8 o'clock. And you'll be able to stream that meeting if you're interested in listening to that presentation. The only other thing is that the meeting materials are online if you haven't already seen them. So the funding alternatives matrix. Is one document, and another document with the details of the different alternative funding options and the report that Roger sent out about the results of the survey.
Any questions? Okay, I don't have the list for public comment, so I'm assuming, is there... Okay, Mr. Lane County, I guess you're the only one that's signed up. Welcome. Yeah, come on up, and so we can make sure we get you on the microphone there, and the camera can pick you up, and they can hear you on the phone.
My name is Fergus McLean. Thanks to the task force for your efforts to figure out what's wrong with ODF&W and how to fix it. After several decades as a contractor dealing with hundreds of resource field professionals, I want to share my subjective impression about ODF&W and Oregon Department of Forestry. kind of a macho culture, maybe not particularly customer oriented. It's just a subjective impression, but I suspect it's this kind of organizational culture that's behind the crisis. It could be considered a hangover from the settler mentality, which let us take this land and use it to turn out commodities that made a few people very rich. That's who we were, but now we're learning that nature is not a commodity, and it's better to try to understand and cooperate with her than to dominate her. Sounds to me, from reading the materials, that much of what the task force is trying to do is figure out how to translate this kind of holistic environmental ethic into public policy Oregonians are willing to pay for. That's tough. There's good news. First, the world seems to be ready to embrace forest-based carbon credits on a massive scale, and Oregon's west side forests are among the world's greatest carbon sinks. There are indications that we may be able to grow our next economy around becoming the world's carbon credit market leader. Second, to maximize production of superior carbon credits, we'll need to create thousands of good jobs and build up a research and educational capacity transformative for our culture and our way of life. The problem is, the agencies with jurisdiction over our wild lands and waters are broken and incapable of leading us through the massive shift we're looking at. It will take a high level of leadership to make the carbon economy a reality. I was excited to learn about the success of Missouri's Conservation Commission, and I understand that some of you are wishing we could duplicate Missouri's success here by creating a science-based, responsive natural resources oversight agency, looking out for all our wild resources and serving everyone, an agency capable of exercising authority over ODF&W. The best news of all is that we already have a lean and effective natural resource agency with that potential capability. An agency which aced its last performance audit, that funnels lottery and federal grant money into restoration, research, and tax-free educational services throughout its deep grassroots network of nearly 100 local stakeholder councils covering the entire state. An agency with a broad vision and a sound foundation capable, with the guidance and influence of this task force, of leading ODF&W and ODF into the coming carbon economy by providing a framework around which an improved Oregon version of Missouri's success can be designed. And that agency, of course, is the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate your input. We had another guest walk in the room. Could you introduce yourself, though?
My name is Jenny Dressler, and I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau.
Great. Glad to have you here, Jenny. Okay, so let's now dive into our discussion of the task force results, and I'm going to ask Roger. For those of you who don't know, Jim is somewhere in Italy right now getting married. I think he's getting married on Saturday, right?
Sunday.
Okay. Nice. So he's been over there on a tour, and he's getting married. So he actually did end up emailing us, which we should have chastised him for that, but... how he misses us, and so he's at least thinking about us. So he's not going to be able to assist us today. So Roger has stepped up to the plate and taken the lead on helping to put together our survey and survey results. Those got mailed out to everybody. We have a fairly decent return. I think we've got all but one. Yeah, everybody responded but one. Yes, Kenji.
Well, Chair, since Jim's gone, does the responsibility of telling a joke fall on you?
No. Well, he tells terrible jokes. And I don't even have a... Roger, do you have a joke?
No, I didn't prepare for that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have any good jokes. So.
Sort of got it.
Welcome, Brad. Could you introduce yourself for the record so we get it on, make sure we have it on the record?
Brad Pettinger, Oregon Trail Commission. And just a rule of thumb, if you want to be on time... don't lock your cell phone in your gun safe and drive 15 miles down the road and realize that you're going to be gone for 3 days and you don't have your phone. And then you got to go back and get it. And then you realize when you dial it, you can't hear it because it's in gun safe.
Well, there's the joke.
So I apologize. So I apologize for being tardy. But
that's a good one.
You're here. That's amazing.
Yeah, you made it. That's good. Okay, so I've asked Roger if he wouldn't mind going over the process with us so that we can at least understand how the process put together, and then we'll start through this. And I have a couple questions for the task force as we start through the process. So,
thanks. Roger. And
first of all, thanks everybody for your quick response and filling out the survey. With the approach that Jim and I took and Beth and Brett was we consolidated some proposals into a general concept. There were a number that were very similar and just rolled them all into one concept to simplify the process. In all, there were about 40 or so different proposals that were out there. But ultimately, it was 33 on this particular survey. You had asked to provide the response on the top eight proposals. Most people did eight. Some looks like may not have done all eight, may have used only a handful of their tallies for this, but what we did then is just compiled it into three separate tiers. So the report that you got yesterday, the first page on it is basically all of the results and tallied and based on the number of votes or the number of tallies on it and then the percentage. And then the second set of charts and numbers break out with the individual tiers. And there was a pretty clear break on what I classified as tier one. Those were the proposals that seemed to have the most support, up to about six votes or 6% or six tallies on it. And then they broke into a second tier. So there were about 11 in that first group, 12 or so in the second group, and 9 or so in the last group. And those were just broken out in order to kind of give you something to work with. So the intent was to really focus on that tier one set of proposals. The way the information is organized, we have the different tiers, and then the comments that were provided on all those are grouped by tier in order to try to make it a little bit easier for you to get through this. I did not go through and try to compile all the detailed material in the same order, but you do have that information to look at. But again, all in all, we had a good response, and I apologize, didn't get this to you sooner. We had a few technical issues in trying to get the report compiled, but I think it's a good starting place for this discussion. Be happy to answer any questions about the process, if there are any.
Okay, any questions? So does everybody have a copy, either electronically or hard copy? I want to make sure everybody. Yep. Okay. So there's a couple comments I'd like to make before we start in. First of all, there was some email discussion, at least that got to me, about who can vote and who can't vote. And so we have voting members on the task force and we have non-voting members on the task force. But this isn't a process where I see that we are making the final vote of what is the task force's decision. This is just a straw poll of the entire task force. And so we had non-voting members vote in the straw, because this is just our first shot of what do we think are the priorities that we want to get more details. So is everybody clear with that? We did have non-voting members from the task force who are members of the task force. We asked them to also vote. So everybody okay with that? Okay, see, head nod. So I just wanted to make sure of that. And then, so the first thing I thought we would do, see if this is okay with everybody, is that we've got what I believe in tier one is the top grouping that we want to go through. So that's the first question I have is there something else either on the list or has come up since then where you say, I'd like to have a discussion about one more item or further down the list and move it up? Or is this the top group, which is tier one, that we want to have the discussions on? So, Jim, let's start with you.
I feel strongly this is the group. I think this is the one that corresponds the most with our criteria.
Okay.
So I looked at it not only which one's got the most votes, but then went back and said which ones are the ones that are most consistent with the meshing of our criteria. And my opinion is tier one captures both of those much more dominantly than the next set of tiers down.
Okay. So let's just go down the line. So is that you on the phone, Rob, talking?
I think it's Wayne.
I'm sorry? Oh, Ms. Representative Krieger, one more time to make sure we all hear it.
Yes.
Did you have a comment?
No, fine.
Oh, okay. So, Brad, you okay with
Yeah, no, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Kenji?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, let's just go down the line. Columbia Sportswear?
Yep. Yep.
I would start with this, and if we need to eventually dip down to the second tier, that would be fine, but clearly this is the place to start.
I agree. Tier one has some promising options. Might be.
I'm comfortable with it, too, although there may be some concepts in some of the other tiers embedded in those that relate to some of these, maybe. So okay. That may come up in discussion.
Paul?
I'm okay with it for now.
Mm-hmm. Mike?
I'm good with it.
Okay. Senator?
Sure.
Okay. Okay.
I just finally found it.
In the
documents.
Okay.
So.
Glad you like it.
Yeah.
Director?
Yeah, I agree, but I would add that it depends on what the final approach is. There may be some in the third tier that would, if matched up with some others, they might make a meaningful package. Mm-hmm. So, but generally, I think tier one, yeah.
Okay, so on the phone, Rob, you okay?
I agree.
Representative Krieger, are you okay with that, with the process for the?
Yeah.
Okay, and who else was on the phone? I can't.
Nancy.
Nancy, are you okay?
I am okay. I agree that there could be other items in some of the lower tiers that might be interesting in combination, but I'm good with starting with tier one.
Okay. So let's, if everybody's okay, let's just start with the marijuana tax. And then if you'll go to your chart, marijuana tax is on page 3 of the proposal. And let me pull up page 3 here. If everybody gets to page 3. So.
You mean page 10?
Page, 11. Let's see, page 11, excuse
yeah,
me.
Okay.
Yeah. So what I was thinking now, what we want to do is discuss it to see if there's any additional information that we would like to have either an agency or legislative, fiscal, or do we need more information on that proposal that would help us to get it into a clearer picture. We're not going to make a decision today. This is mainly just discussion about additional information on the proposal that we would want to have discussed. So, Brad?
Yeah, Mark, I was here last meeting. I may have missed it earlier, but on the funded proposals, we have eight ones at the top tier. Are we looking to implement 1, 2, 3, 4? How many of those are we talking about implementing? Or suite, is there a suite we're looking at? Or is there one thing? As far as giving some kind of a strategizing here, what's our, outside of a certain number we'd like to come in, a money number, what are we thinking here? Is it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, are we stuck on anything yet?
I would say we're not stuck on anything yet. What we said early on was we were going to try to put the top 8 or the top 10 to review, to say, okay, we want additional information on these, and then from that, in our probably June meeting, we would start massaging those to say, okay, this one's got some nexus in it, this one we like, maybe we want to pull from another group and put something together, but I don't think we would make those decisions today. We're just today trying to fill in the blanks of what each of these proposals are.
No, I got that. I'm just thinking as far as when whatever gets implemented, are we thinking one thing's going to do it, two things, three things, or that's up to the legislature to depend on?
I would say that's up to the task force, okay. Yeah. We still are quite a ways from that decision. So, yes.
For this particular idea, I'm curious what other sectors, who else may be interested in this revenue, across agencies. At this point, does
everybody.
Anybody know if there's other other agencies, other sectors gunning for some of this money?
Senator, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to that question, but maybe you could answer.
Who are they? And do they have champions?
Which one? For the
marijuana tax.
Marijuana tax, yeah.
The law enforcement. I mean, law enforcement for one.
Five has a little breakdown.
I'm not sure.
Not of this last document, but of the one that we used when we were filling out the survey. It says 40% to common school, 20%
yeah.
That one.
Yes, those have already been allocated, but my understanding is we're looking at potential new revenue that goes beyond the forecast. Is there anybody that's having a conversation like we are about that particular?
I'm sure there are. I don't sit on those task forces, but I guarantee that there are.
But you don't know who?
Yeah, I just don't know who, you know. But I'm sure that there are groups and stakeholders that are lining up for
yep. and
that money.
Please don't raise your hand. Just go ahead and speak up. You know, just go ahead.
Well, I think for this and all of them, really, we need some kind of a more detailed fiscal impact assessment of how much money we're talking about with all of them. I mean, a few of them have a dollar amount. Most of them don't. And really, in the absence of that, we're kind of just shooting in the dark here. I really think maybe we need to narrow it down to the ones a handful that we think are, you know, really the top of the top tier. But once you have that, somebody's really got to sit down and crunch some numbers. And I don't know if the staff, if Legislative Fiscal Office can help us with that or someone else, but we need some economists to really let us know if it's really worth pursuing or not, because they're not all equal. I mean, there's a pretty.
Senator Richard.
Oh, welcome, Senator.
I have this general point I want to make. None of them are, what I've called something different, take it off the list. But I mean, first thing is that this money really is against federal law. And that's to be, teaches to wrap our hopes around something that the federal government may, the next president said it is no longer allowed. The legislative decision to be implemented was pretty well giving up the marijuana tax revenue money was pretty well debated, and a number of votes were influenced by how that money was going to be spent. So this thought that should be a bit of a problem. The nexus between marijuana and outdoor recreation is huge at best. And I agree with further the former speaker that all of these things here are close standing by legislative revenue and legislative discourse to what is possible and what kind of funding might be there.
So I heard two things. One, we would want to talk about maybe ask DOJ whether it's legal that we could use this money. Is that where we're because of the Fed? Right.
The money that cannot be used for anything. The current administration is saying as long as it's state, you don't cost state lives, you don't distribute to children and so forth, but it's okay. The fact that, we're going to have an election in November and a new president in January, and that could change. Because if the next administration actually decides to enforce law, and
mm-hmm. Yeah, potentially. Jim?
Well, I just wanted to offer some thoughts. Our little discussion group been talking about criteria and talking about some of these ideas, and maybe we could share with the group some of our thinking. One of the things that we think is important is to ask the question, which has already been put on the table, what's the financial content here. Is this an idea that's going to get us where we need to be with ODFW in whole cloth here, or are we going to have to put six ideas together? It seems to me there's a great advantage to finding one elegant idea that has a nexus to conservation, that is politically doable, and generates enough money that's likely to grow down the road so we're not back around the table in 10 years. So some of these ideas, don't raise enough money, so you're going to have to put together kind of a stew of ideas, you know, five or six ideas. Mm-hmm. It just seems to me from a political point of view, that's a great disadvantage compared to one idea that basically is sufficient. I don't know enough about the marijuana tax issue to know if it is or isn't, but I know several of these other ideas are big enough that we, in one fell swoop, we could accomplish this goal and would be expected to grow. The second thing I think we think is pretty important is to have some logical connection to conservation. And some of these are just, you know, kind of who can we gouge? You know, let's just gouge these guys and gouge those guys and gouge some other guys and then throw it into a pot and see if we got enough. And it seems to me when we try to explain this to the public through the media, through elected representatives, it's much more strong a message if there's some kind of a relevance between the broad value of conservation and the broad funding approach, or some kind of linkage between conservation and outdoor recreation, for example, or something like that. Mm-hmm. So those are a couple of things that it just seems to me is pretty important to think about. The third thing we think is pretty important is there's a big, big difference in terms of political doability between new money and gouging out some old money that's already allocated, basically creating a zero-sum fight, either with the voters or with the politicians. So there's a couple of these ideas that are essentially new money, and then there's a couple, there's quite a few of these ideas that are basically just kind of reallocating money that would have otherwise gone to education or would have gone to public services or just public safety or transportation or something like that. So as we think about these, we might want to think about some of those categories.
Okay, any other thoughts?
One other thought would be the cost of implementation too. For example, if there's a new tax, is there a mechanism already in place, or would retailers or whatever have to start spending money on a collection mechanism? So that should definitely be a consideration too.
Ease of administration, yes. Too much friction in the system, burden money, yes.
Yeah, like transit lodging tax, I think they get 5% for administration to collect the tax.
So I'd like to, I'd like to echo Senator Witt's remarks, and I agree with Jim's remarks. I'm very uncomfortable with moving forward with a plan that is, you know, this whole marijuana thing is moving quickly, and nobody really knows where it's all going to go. Nobody knows what it's going to look like. I mean, we didn't know what it looked like last year. It's different today than it was last year. It's going to be different a year from now, and I'm really uncomfortable with pinning a process like this on that. In addition to, let's face it, it's the big new honeypot that everybody wants part of, you know. So, I mean, I think everybody's going to be going after that money. They already are, and there's going to continue to be more people piling into it. And I think that speaks back to what Jim was talking about. It seems to me we should be looking for a way to do this thing with a nice, elegant idea that meets the criteria across the board, and not a hodgepodge of the same pot of money that everybody else is either already going after or already has a piece that has their hand on.
Okay, so just so everybody's aware, 64% of you put this as a high priority.
Yeah.
So I just want everybody to be aware of that. Bruce?
I was just going to endorse Jim's comments, except that I'm willing not to be religious about the nexus with conservation. Our, you know, most effective conservation funding source currently is the lottery, and there really is no nexus there. I'm more interested in getting us a revenue source that we can actually do. And there are a lot of arguments you can make tying funding for conservation to bottled water. I don't know. I mean, you can construct these things, but that maybe comes after the fact. So I actually prefer, as Jim said, a really broad-based something where most everybody is paying there. But if we are going to zero in on somebody, I wouldn't, make it a test that it has to be those people who are already paying or who are out there using it. We ought to get the money where we can.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Agree with everyone. Thought that another thought we might think of as we go through this is we sort of have two different tracks. One, to make ODFW whole minus any additional federal funds, and then there's the possibility of federal funds coming. So as we look at these options, it could be good as a plan B to identify options that could bring in the match money that we'd be looking for should the federal legislation come through.
Okay, so Claire?
Well, I'll just weigh in just because. I'm in agreement with Jim, and although I'm very interested in seeing, you know, more new money, big sources come in, I'm looking ahead to what kind of campaign or what kind of convincing we'd have to do to pass something, you know, by the legislature or the public. And I think that's where this whole issue of nexus is very, very important. And the stronger it is, I think the better off we'll be in getting something successfully passed that will have broad support.
I think when you think about nexus, if you think about why we're in the position we're in right now, it's because we had Hunters and Fishers funding the entire program, and they simply just aren't a big enough group to fund the needs of the department. To me, the fish and wildlife are to the benefit of the entire state. And so the further we can make that case and not try to tie it to hikers or hunters or fishers or whoever, that's limiting our potential. If we can show the state that this is an important resource, then we have a much broader chance at a broader funding source. And I think that's something we should think about.
It is the fish and wildlife, not fish and game, right? So
that's what it's talking about.
I was going to make that comment, too. It's about conservation, not recreation necessarily. And I just feel that there is actually a nexus between the growing of marijuana and conservation. It's been done on public lands throughout this state for a long time, and people haven't even been able to access certain parts of the state without a gun being put in their face. And so there, you can build a nexus around the marijuana industry and habitat for sure.
I'm just reading the direction. So, I mean, it sounds like we're kind of a little bit. The thinking was when we were voting on these was we want to try to get not make a decision on which ones we're going to carry to the legislature. We were going to throw everything against the wall, see what the priorities of the group were, and then we were going to say we need additional information on this one and this one and this one, and then once we got that additional information, then we were going to come back in June and then start what I think is Jim's discussion. Well, that one doesn't have a nexus, or we need to combine this one, or we need to reduce it down to the vital few, or whatever the decision is, but we were going to try to answer a lot of the questions first, but not make a decision today about that. Okay. So that's where I thought we were going. So Jim and then Kenji?
I think Kenji was before me.
Okay, Kenji.
So questions about combining things would be at a later date. So yeah. Today is just like, I just want some more information on this or whatever. Here's a information piece that I'd like is how many beverages or bottles that are sold each year are subject to the bottle bill. So there you go, concrete.
What was that?
How many beverages are sold each year that are subject to the bottle bill?
Okay,
does
Jim?
That help?
And I was offering my comments just to help us think about the information we might need so that when we get to June, you know, we can kind of do the sorting. So with regard to, I actually voted for marijuana as one of my eight, even though it's not my favorite. And with regard to that, it seems like there's two things that have emerged already, just kind of practice for process. One is, does it raise enough money? And two is, whose ox is it going to gouge? You know, who else has an interest in that? So, you know, as long as we go for each one of these and say, okay, what information do we need from staff to be able to make our evaluation in June when we actually start doing our sorting? I wasn't proposing that we just sort it out right now.
Okay.
But I was proposing that we maybe use those criteria to help us think about, okay, this is going to be a disadvantage for this proposal in June for me. I need to know a little bit more about this, that, or the other.
So what I think I heard was we need some more financial information because there's like the fourth paragraph down, whoever provided that comment did provide some financial information, but I don't know whether that's accurate or not. So, you know, where it talks about, the potential to raise $3.4 million in the first month and $36 million a year. Estimates are $1 billion within a few years. I don't know if that's accurate or not, or do we need
that? I couldn't figure out, is that a gross sales number? Is that a revenue tax revenue raise number? That was unclear to me what
that
is.
I'm going to look
online and just typed in, marijuana revenue for Oregon, and those are the numbers that came up.
So
we don't really know if it was a tax number or a gross number.
Nope, that's why we need more information.
Right. Okay.
So I'm looking at Senator Edwards and Beth. Would legislative fiscal be able to help us with that, to get us some numbers, you think?
Yeah.
Okay. So the numbers we would want to know is, what is it brought in to date, and what is the projection for 17-19 biennium on what the revenue would be for marijuana? And then at least that would give us a figure on whether this group decides whether we want to actually go after some of that revenue to help fund Fish and Wildlife. So I see, okay.
Well, I just wanted to clarify, and I don't know who or how many people put this forward, but whether we're talking about an allocation out of the existing tax revenues, which, as I understand, are already allocated, even though they may be growing, or whether we're talking about an additional percentage sales tax or excise tax or something on top there. Those are two different things. One is new money, and the other is just growing revenue. Trying to take money that people think they already have is much harder in a lot of ways.
And I don't know if we can answer that question, because some people would say, I was using existing when I voted for it, and some people might say, I was thinking maybe it would be additional revenue that the legislature would say, okay, because of this additional revenue, we're going to allocate a certain percentage to Fish and Wildlife.
I think the laws changed too in June to allow additional products, so that may change the numbers. So I think the question then is that allocation the same regardless of the revenue, or is it capped at a certain amount and that then frees up new dollars?
Okay, so that's a question that we need answered. So I'm poor looking at Beth a lot here. So
I also think that we need to know if we're talking about this at the retail end or the wholesale. I mean, when I put forward this concept, it was actually at the medical industry and the growing industry, and not at necessarily the retail end of things. I think that that's going to be the same thing we'll have to figure out when it comes to the recreation and the bird seed also. Which end of the spectrum are we talking about? Hitting it to the people that are purchasing it, or the retailer selling it, or more of the operations in the field?
Well, so what I'm going to do is just keep track of all the questions that you have today, and then I'll work with both LRO and LFO to see what we can come up with for the answers to those questions.
Okay, so and look, just to make sure we're all on the same page, what questions did you hear that you're going to look at?
I have heard so far the questions that Jim mentioned, so who else might be interested in this revenue? And I think, on that one, the approach I was going to take was to ask what the current allocation is, what the legislature agreed to, how far into the future that applies, and then what's going forward that might be happening with new products coming online, where the tax is applied at this point. This just isn't a subject I'm very familiar with, so we'll just get all of that laid out for what the current situation is. What the potential is for revenue, which goes back into a number of those questions. And then I also heard cost of implementation, both administrative and what the collection mechanism would be.
I would just offer, don't forget Senator Whitson's comment about, is it legal?
Oh, yeah. Can we mix the the dollars?
Yeah. As I understood Senator Whitson's question, it has more to do with the bigger issue of the legality of marijuana sales, not whether or not this group or any group could use some of that funding. It's the bigger picture issue.
Right, but what I thought I heard him say is it likely that we would count on this and then the federal government would take it away?
Yeah.
In other words, how certain is it that this will be stable?
Yeah, I don't know if we can answer that question.
I think so far all the questions that have been asked are also captured in the comments from the survey.
Yeah.
So obviously go to those questions too. But
yeah, there is a number of questions there too. And I don't know if they're all legislative questions or not, but at least there was, I'm trying to quickly look through there.
Hey, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Yes, Kurt.
Sorry to just distract you here, but I think it might be valuable and a valuable exercise here today to actually have started at the bottom of the list. Give anyone a chance. Somebody voted for, well, there's a few that didn't get any votes. The Timber piece didn't get any votes. And there, so there's a few that did not get any votes, but most of them had at least some support. I think it'd be valuable to hear, essentially have folks make the case for why some of the lower tiered items should be considered. Because I think that part of the, I think for some of those ideas, there may not be a great understanding amongst the tax task force members about what those items were, which is why they didn't get supported. I guess I don't have a vote, so I'm just throwing that out as a suggestion.
Okay, so what I thought I did was I asked the group that whether you want to just deal with the top eight or the, whatever it is, the top the tier one, and rather than dive into the tier two and tier three, and I thought I heard the group say we're just dealing with the tier one. Okay.
Fair enough.
Okay. Okay, so any more questions on marijuana that would help us to frame the discussion about whether that's going to carry forward at our June meeting or not? Senator.
I have a question for you, a process question, a clarification. What is going to, so you're seeking clarifying questions today. How much information do you want about the politics of each issue or ever? Like, I mean, at the last meeting, I could sit here and tell you about how difficult each and every single item is going to be to pass. But at some point, the task force has to come up with some recommendation. It has to move forward to something, and it can't be nothing. So I'm looking for direction from the group. What would be useful in determining, I mean, there are some things here that, that's never going to happen. And I don't want the group to spend too much effort going down that road, but I'm happy to share just one legislator's perspective about, you know, just at least you can assess who you're going to be up against to the extent that I know. Mm-hmm. And on some of them, I won't know. On some of them, I will. So, but I don't want to be the wet blanket on this whole on this process. You know, so what's most useful for you in terms of how we move forward in developing recommendations?
Yeah. Jim? And Kenji? Go ahead, Jim.
Okay. Yeah, I think a political analysis would be very useful for us to just give us some perspective on the potential that's out there, just so like you said, we're not shooting in the dark and with a high likelihood of missing. So if the analysis is there, that'll give some better background. Maybe it's an idea that we really want to push forward, and we'll definitely talk to you about it. But if it's something like no go, nix, ixnay, it's dead in the water as soon as we even present it, it's actually good background to know. So we'd appreciate it.
So the danger is we've got one senator who's the chair of a committee that's going to give us his political perspective on whether it, and then another senator might say, no, I think that is good, or another representative might say. So
I was going to say, do we need to have all four of our representative legislators and perhaps a couple of policy
not that I
in
don't,
the room
I,
as
I value
a, as a
your
subcommittee?
Opinion, but
I would share with you that my perspective is that there aren't many items that if they had the collective support of the group, I wouldn't personally support. So, you know, revenue measures have to start in the House. So that's the first filter. So looking at the makeup of the Oregon House and different stakeholders and constituencies that are going to weigh in on the process, some are definitely probably, well, there are a few that I wouldn't vote for actually, but, some are definitely probably non-starters, and others it's just like, well,
in tier
you gotta
one.
Poll the legislature. I really don't know. I can just tell you here are the people that you will be mixing it up with.
Each of us here is really offering our own personal opinion, so I don't think it hurts to have Senator Edwards' opinion. I think in some ways it could be very educational for us up here. I think gridlock and special interests may be a reason why we're here anyway. And so while that may not necessarily guide us into not doing something, it needs to inform us as to why we may want to or not do something. So I think we would take Senator Edwards' comments on this like we take everyone's comments on the task force and use our own brains to figure out what we believe in.
Okay, Jim?
Well, my thought would be that we recognize right off the bat, if there were any politically easy things, we would have already done them. So every single thing on here, there's a really good reason why across this country this problem doesn't get solved very often, because it is a ranking of very politically difficult things. Having said that, I would say if our four legislators together kind of did a little straw caucus and came back to us in June when we were ready to look at all the other information and said, on a scale of 1 to 10, this is easier than that, this is the most difficult, this one is up in the range where we kind of think in the legislature would be a non-starter. Might not be a non-starter with the voters if you went to an initiative, but would be a non-starter in the legislature. You know, so we, relatively speaking, as we're evaluating all the other criteria, we evaluate the political difficultness as well. What I don't want to do is right now have them say, well, this is a non-starter, and that's a non-starter, and that's a non-starter. Don't even bother getting your fiscal information or anything else. I think we'd end up killing all the ideas right now. Mm. We'd all just go home in despair and discouragement. I don't want to see us do that.
So that's the process question that the senator's asking. You know, do we want to go through the eight knowing that if we do a lot of homework on it, it was probably a non-starter, or do we want to go through the eight and do the homework and then come back as a group and say, okay, now we're going to filter these. We're going to filter them through the political. We're going to filter them through the criteria, you know, the nexus, all those kinds of things. I think that's what you were asking, right, Senator?
This is very helpful feedback. Go ahead.
No, Senator, go ahead. You were still talking.
No, I was going to say, and when we get to that point, given that feedback, I would just have one item that I would point out for specifically the marijuana tax. And that is that if this is 2%, if this is a budgetary exercise of 2% of sales above some certain threshold, then it is a budgetary and it requires a simple majority. If it is a new tax, then it will require a 3/5 majority.
Yep.
So those are completely different political calculations in terms of the viability in the legislature, stakeholders that are lined up for the money notwithstanding, just in terms of how you get votes for something. One is a spending decision, simple majority. One is raising new revenue, 3/5 majority.
Yeah, Scott?
Oh, he was actually ahead of me. I was just thinking it would be good to know why it's a non-starter, just because it might help us in our questions. So what you just explained there.
So I can't help but the thought occurs to me that while I understand there are political realities that we should consider, aren't we also kind of talking about right now the tail wagging the dog? I mean, at this point, this is supposed to be a collection of the people coming up with an idea or ideas to take to the legislature, and the legislature are our representatives, and they are supposed to move the will of the people forward. And so it seems to me we should be making recommendations to the legislature on this matter. So I think we should be mindful of that, not, you know, disregard what he has to say, but I do think that that's the purpose of this committee.
He's just giving us a dose of reality.
I get it. I think we should be mindful of why we're here.
And my comments are simply to help you guys understand all the people that aren't in this room.
Sure.
There's a lot of people that aren't here that have other interests. And so I get what you're saying. I kind of agree.
Okay, Kenji, and then we need to move along here. I want to try to make sure we're out of here by 4 and get – we've got much more to go through.
But it'll also, it's a very useful exercise because it'll also inform us of who other stakeholders we need to talk to and sell the idea to, because if you can get them on board, it becomes a much easier process. So, yeah.
Okay, so here's what I think I'm hearing. We're going to still go through all 8. We're going to ask for information, additional information, and then on the June 8th meeting is where we're going to really have the rubber meets the road discussions about the criteria, the political reality, whether we want to combine things, move them together. and not do that today. Is that okay? Okay, I see all head nod. Okay, so any more information on marijuana that we can have staff look into? That you want any more questions answered? Okay, we have that. Yep, we can get that information. Any other questions from folks on the phone?
Mark, I just had a conversation with Senator Quintet. I went along with what Senator Andrews was saying. This committee, this workforce, is connected to finding new revenue sources. The preponderance of the constituent input that I had during the last 2 years regarding fish and wildlife, why can't they live within their means? So I'm not trying to put words in Chris's mouth, but it's not a slam dunk to come up with an idea of a new tax and say we're going to do the support to pass it, because there's a lot of angst out there that the Christian game has been spending a lot more money than they've been spending more money than they have, and they haven't been spending very wisely. I'm not saying that I agree or disagree with that position. I'm just saying that there's a lot of people out there who are going to have a lot of angst about how the Fish and Wildlife Commission is spending money. So I don't think we're going to start talking about new tactics and so forth. We have to look at that reality.
Okay. Thank you. Ready to move on to number two? And number two got the same amount of votes as the first one, and this is recreation equipment. So everybody's hopefully had a chance to read it over. Briefly explained there. There are some questions on that one, and it's actually for number 13 also, it had two responses. Let's see, it had 14 there, and then on the second one it had 13 responses also. So additional information needed. Let's see, administrative costs was one question that came up. Let's see, the cost of the infrastructure needed to collect the tax. Okay, that's what I just said, that one. You know, the big question I would have is how much are we talking about? How much could it raise? You know, and I don't know how we get that figure. So, Scott, you have any kind of a...
I think the biggest question is, what are you going to tax?
Yeah, okay.
How are you going to define this? Are you going to tax coats, and that means everyone who goes outside is going to be taxed for the outdoors? Or how do you draw the word nexus that we've been pulling out? Like, what is a nexus of conservation and outdoor equipment?
There's a very basic question raised about backpacks, and do you tax school backpacks versus people who use backpacks in the outdoors, and then how do you determine the difference between those two things?
And at what level? I mean, is that the wholesaler level? Is it at the retail level? And look, I haven't been in a sporting goods store in 2 years because I buy online.
Well, I think the level in some ways it doesn't matter, because we don't want to raise fish and wildlife licensing because we don't want to price people out of the industry. Who's going to buy the most gear to go outdoors? Probably fishers and hunters. If you're going to go buy a coat, what's more expensive coat, a hunting coat or a casual coat? Hunting coats are $600. They're going to have a higher tax. What we're really doing is just having those same people pay in some ways more than they were. You're raising fishing and hunting licenses, but through product and equipment.
So it seems like the answer to this question we need to ask the question. We're not asking the legislature this question or legislative committee. I mean, we have to ask that question. What do you, when the people that voted for this, what did you think about when you said recreational equipment? What would you like to get the answer to? Meryl?
For me, it's everything. And one of the things that I don't see here, one of my concepts was recreation equipment, recreation outdoor and nature-based equipments, which would include birdseed and optics, so that one industry or business does not bear the brunt. So all of it together, which is not actually
on this. Yeah, because birdseed birdseed went down in flames.
So here. For me, but answering the question, for me, it's everything from, purchasing skis to optics to, tennis rackets to, even, any sports-related equipment of that sort. I wasn't really thinking about clothes, quite frankly. I was thinking more of products that get you outdoors. So really, people who would, purchase clothes for hiking wouldn't necessarily.
So let me put words in your mouth. Is it everything in Sportsman's Warehouse except clothing?
Huh. Or REI, which is called Recreational Equipment Incorporated.
These are good questions. But the thing about something, like hiking boots, that's along your lines of a lot of people go out and buy some sort of type of or light, and they're not, going to be hiking into the wilderness. They're just kind of walking around town.
Yeah, Timberland had a whole line of yellow boots that are urban.
So I'm a pretty avid elk hunter, and everything I wear elk hunting is Columbia. I can guarantee you it's good. So, Jim?
It just seems like what we're trying to do is get our arms around how much money might be raised as you expand the questioning to apparel and other things. Start out with something hardcore like ice axes and Binox, and then you end up with apparel and boots and all kinds of stuff there. It gets more nebulous as to what's recreational versus what's used in the home. A shortcut might be to just go to the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies and say, when you were examining this particular category, what they were thinking was an expansion of the Wallop Bro tax and the Pittman Robertson tax, which currently is fishing gear and hunting gear,
right,
into other recreational categories. Can see what they had, see what analysis they had, rather than ask Beth to just go around the table and say, what did everybody have in mind? I voted for it too. But I think basically taking a crack at the first cut of the analysis from the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, and when you guys look at this, what was in and what was out, and how much money did it raise, and then we could do an Oregon version of that. Then we could come back in June and say, I like this idea, but they were too narrow. I like this idea. Oh, my gosh, they had everything from rain gear to socks. No, that's not what I had in mind. Then we could make it bigger or make it smaller in June. But maybe take a crack at the same analysis they did.
Okay, so
to inform us.
I apologize. I didn't read that in there. So, Jim, is that in that document? Jim, Roger?
In the presentation that Patricia Allen did, in the PowerPoint, they ran numbers on items like recreational vehicles, commercially prepared bird seed, binoculars, spotting scopes, kayaks, canoes, paddles, wildlife watching tour operators, and camping equipment. So they did, those are the broad categories.
So they didn't look at clothing then?
Camping equipment, non-clothing was included in their report. But we can certainly find out more details from them on what they looked at.
Because I think they looked at these very same questions already.
So, Mr. Chair, I mean, it seems to me that even if we were to stick with this idea and to say it has merit, I'm still really stuck on implementation. In the absence of a sales tax, it seems to me we should figure out how do we implement some kind of how do we go about collecting revenue on outdoor goods, and then we could come up with whatever the list is of whatever items we were going to collect on. But it seems to me we should have a collective understanding of how we even implement it at a state level. We're not just going to go after manufacturers. If we're trying to cast a broad net. So, how do we do that in the absence of a sales tax? I think that, implementation is a really important question to be asked. And then secondly, the thing that I'm uncomfortable with is we got to circle back around and try to understand how internet sales in particular affect this industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody in this room goes online and they buy online because they can buy it for 20% less than Fisherman's Marine or someplace else. So that segment is just going to grow. I mean, just look at Amazon, and it's pretty clear that segment's growing.
Well, I look at Sports Authority going bankrupt, EMS going bankrupt.
Right, exactly.
The retail situation is not super awesome right now.
Amazon.com is the world's largest sporting goods retailer now.
Yep,
by far. They sold zero sporting goods 8 years ago.
There you go. So I think we got to answer. If we're going to do that, I think we really need to answer the implementation question before we even talk about what it is we would be putting a tax on. At the federal level, it's pretty clear, but you know, at this level, I don't know how we do it.
So how does this task force answer that question? How do we get an answer to that question, Senator?
Well, I agree. I also liked what Jim said, and I think that an expansion of the existing tax, I mean, those are collected at, I'm not sure, you probably know more about where those, but they're at the wholesale level, I think. I mean, they're not a retail.
Manufacturing level.
At the what?
The manufacturing
the
level.
The current federal excise tax are at the manufacturing level.
Federal excise.
Okay. So how the state does that, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, that would need to be, you have to get some sort of information. And then, notwithstanding the comments about, you know, online retail sales, I don't know how the retailers implemented the cell phone, the burner phone fee, but there is somehow, there was some sort of agreement reached with retailers on collecting without, absent the infrastructure for sales tax, retailers that sell burner phones, and burner phones weren't, you know, paying in because they don't have a plan. They're not paying into the 911 fee pool. And so legislature grappled with that for several sessions and then came up with something. I'm not saying that it's a model to be duplicated.
How's tobacco taxed in the state? I know the state and the feds tax tobacco. Is that a...
But alcohol.
There's a whole infrastructure just around that and stamping the packages of tobacco packages, and yeah, it's...
So who do we talk to get an answer to that question?
Department of Revenue or Legislative Revenue? Looking at Beth.
I can guesstimate that if the Department of Revenue has to come up with a tax collection mechanism for this, it's gonna eat up whatever you'd get out of the thing.
No, I don't agree. Well, I mean, you've got hotel tax. Hotels are paying taxes. They're paying a retail tax on all of their hotel rooms, and DOR collects it, and they keep it's like 2% or something. It's based on actual cost, and it's under 2%.
Yeah. So another one, Beth, for you?
I've got the question.
Okay. And then, Roger, I think you got the charge to get all the information from there and how it worked, how they proposed it worked. And then it'd be interesting, I again apologize, I didn't read that in detail, but it would be interesting to know the pros and cons, why they didn't choose that at the blue ribbon level, you know, so.
As I recall from her presentation of Dave Chanda's remarks, they had a dollar amount in mind that they were trying to reach. And that didn't hit that mark.
Okay.
That was why they didn't pursue it at that point.
Okay.
I think one of the more elegant parts of some of the other solutions was when the hunter and the angler was not further impacted by the initiative. There was a way to exempt the hunter and angler. And so as we're further defining and developing what this proposal looks like, I'd want to have some data and some information on what types of outdoor goods are being used by the hunter and angler most often relative to the overall size of the market. And I know the binocular business very well, and I know that hunters and angler, specifically hunters, use the product for all kinds of things, including wildlife viewing. So when they're being taxed twice, if you will, then they're being hurt. So I think this is part of the definition of the goods we'd want to consider.
Mm-hmm. So is that a request?
I think it's a comment relative to the further definition of what the proposal would look like, that we have the hunter and angler in mind as we're defining the goods that would be part of the tax.
Okay. Anything more on recreational equipment that we would like information on so we can make a decision in June? Okay, seeing none, let's move to bottled water fee on page That is on page 18. So what additional information do you need? This is where one of the questions, I forget who brought it up, but was it you, Kenji, that how many bottles of water beverages are sold annually in Oregon? And let's see. We already know the revenue that's raised from the fee right now. So is this, when I read this, I was kind of questioning, is the task force looking at additional revenue? In other words, we would have instead of 5 cents, it would be whatever, 6 or 7? Or are we saying we would like a share of the current revenue, or both?
What revenue are you talking about?
Yeah.
Bottled water. Yeah, the 5 cents. I thought we were looking at the five cent
fee. The proposal was not a bottle, not the deposit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one's
that's later.
Oh, I thought
that one's later.
Oh, okay, that is later. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, but
so I'm confused. Can
it was
we
not a deposit?
Are we? Because I'm trying to follow this, looking at specific proposals.
Well, the next one on the list is got the highest votes is the bottled water fee. You got 10 votes.
Which proposal number was
idea
that?
Idea 16.
Number 16.
Okay, I'm looking at
on
proposal
page
number 4, which was bottle and can deposit.
Okay, now page 18, it's number 16.
Yeah.
And Mark? That's a different report. I got to open up, so I'll find it.
It's Mark? The last one that Roger sent us.
Yeah. Yes. Can anybody confirm whether bottled water bottles will be subject to the bottle bill? I remember reading that there's going to be some sort of transition. Yeah. Okay.
I think they all are.
Currently subject to the bottle bill.
All of them are? Okay.
Yeah, there's a deposit on single serving bottles of water.
Okay, good to know. Thank you.
And that would be one mechanism for collecting this tax. You'd, rather than paying a nickel per bottle, you'd pay 6 cents, but you get 5 back, or you pay 7 cents, you get 5 back. That'd be a very simple way to collect that.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to collect it would be at the wholesale level.
Senator, I think adding a deposit, attaching the deposit would be troublesome and probably be fiercely opposed by both retailers and other wholesalers of these products. It's already quite an interesting dynamic there, where who gets the proceeds of that money. I don't think an energy deposit would work if that's a sales tax.
Yeah, I mean, this has been brought up many times in legislative session, but again, it's back to the group. Do we want to get more information on this, and in the June meeting, do we want to talk about that at our June meeting? Yes, Jim.
I voted for it as an answer. Yes, I'd like to know more about it. I don't want to kill this idea before I know more about it. It may turn out that it's so politically difficult. I have a problem because I don't think it has a very good nexus to conservation. But if it raises a whole pile of money and it's more politically doable than the alternative, then I'm going to end up voting for it. So I would urge us not to drop any of these ideas right now, but just basically flesh out what we need to know. And then let's have a hell of a fracas in June and actually weigh our criteria one against the other and settle on what we think will do the job. None of these are going to be easy. I guarantee you, Senator Whitsitt and Edwards will help us to understand whatever we choose
political
will be
reality.
Difficult. And we'll make a judgment whether it's even possible in the legislature, or whether it's going to require an initiative, or whether the idea is dead, you know. But let's put the politics in with the other criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now let's go back a little bit. So now that Brett's here, we have all agreed that he'll chair that committee. Is that what we assumed we agreed to? Okay.
That's what you get for being late.
Thanks.
The golden rule.
Yeah, welcome, Brett. Glad to see you.
Apologies, everybody. There have been another task force on wildfire costs and a meeting, a us-do meeting that ended. So it's hard to be
Good to have you here.
Yeah. Okay, Bruce?
And just to be very clear, we're not talking about the deposit here, which is what has been debated mostly in the legislature, I think. This is something new. It's analogous to a sales tax at the
excise
level.
That's correct. I stand corrected. So
could we, as a suggestion, could we consolidate the notion of looking at beverage bottles as a potential revenue source, and you just kind of consolidate that as a notion, and then collect information. I personally would like to know, what are we talking about? What does that universe look like? How many bottles are we talking about? You know, is it a penny? Is it a nickel? You know, I mean, I don't really have any context. You know, so I think it's really important, if we can, to get some information. You know, as to, do we apply this universally to all bottles as an additional deposit or an additional, you know, tax, whatever you want to call it? You know, this
was my proposal I put in, and it was just aimed at bottled water.
Just water.
And it's, I couldn't come up with any data on Oregon-specific sales units of bottled water.
I'm pretty sure if we get a hold of a soft drink lobbyist, he'll pretty well tell us.
The best I could come up with was there were 50 billion individual containers sold in the U.S. last year, and if we're just 1% of that, it's 500 million containers, potentially. So, you know, if you put a penny on them, it's 5 million a year or 10 million a biennium. If you put 2 cents on it, it's, you know, going to raise you $20 million. So
I support the concept.
It's scalable.
Yeah.
It's scalable depending on what kind of rate you want to put on it. But that was the best I could come up with. And hopefully legislative fiscal or legislative revenue office could come up with a better number on the actual number of units sold recently, and then you can scale it from there.
Yeah, Paul, it was numbers, page 62 and 63 of the documents that talks about the funding proposal and the criteria is where he's reading from. So any other input on that one? Senator.
Clarifying question. Is it at proposing at the distributor level then? Or it'd be assessed and collected at the distributor level?
That'd be one way to do it. The other way would be through the deposit mechanism, whichever, you know, is more doable. But at the wholesale level, I think it would be, there's relatively few bottlers or, you know, distributors of this stuff. So
right.
If you do it at that high level on the number of units.
And there's a reason you asked that question, I know, but.
Tell
us the reason.
Well, I mean, so retail level versus wholesale level, it's different, kind of different universe of, well, not completely different universe, but different stakeholders are affected differently. So
right.
That's
right.
One reason. Second reason being the deposit, which is different than a new fee, and the, so the unclaimed, there's the unclaimed deposit portion, and there are all sorts of, well, so the distributors hold on to that.
Mm-hmm.
As a retailer, I'm a retailer, so I know I sell a lot of bottled beverages. It would happen at the distribution level.
Yeah,
that's in my view, that's probably the clearest path for something like that would be at the distribution level.
Okay.
And then the one other piece of context is that once our recycling, if our recycling levels didn't hit 80% by a certain date, and they haven't, then I believe it's sometime in the next 12 months, and I'm not sure what date, maybe it's next year, the deposit, which is different, but the deposit goes from 5 cents to 10 cents. And I don't know what date that's on, but it's just, April 1st, okay, so that's just context.
And so question is, if it's at the distributor level, then the distributor could transfer that cost onto the consumer. I just want to be clear because
we're
of course talking about this and trying to clarify. We will have to have the message as clear as day to the public.
Well, and I can tell you as a retailer, the translation is going to be, if we said it was if we came up with a nickel, it's going to end up costing me 8 cents.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And that's, so that's it would cost me 10 cents.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So to be clear, why don't we ask legislative revenue or fiscal to look at it as a wholesale collection so they know which rabbit they're chasing.
Okay, Roger.
Yeah, just a question. So when the tax or when the deposit goes up, what's the stat, what happens with that extra 5 cents that goes on? What's the plan or what happens with the legislation at that point?
To be honest, I don't know.
I don't think the legislation that triggers that increase said anything about that.
So your point there, Roger, I'm sorry. Your point is that potentially that we could go after that.
I just didn't know if it was already earmarked. If it's not earmarked, then that may be an option.
So could we get an answer to that question, what the bill says? If it goes from 5 to 10 after April 1st, is there a mechanism already identified for that 5 cents?
Well, isn't it just the deposit? Goes back. It's just the deposit goes up.
It's
10 cents back.
The size of the escheatment would end up going. It's a deposit, so the consumer gets it back, except when doesn't get it back.
Okay.
People like me that curbside everything.
Yeah, you're right.
And then the distributors
keep
that,
cents.
And they prying that out of their hands is difficult.
Impossible.
But, there have been plenty of proposals over the years to keep the escheatment and put it into funding other things. And
yeah, if you got 10 cents, the idea would be you'd pick up more cans and rather than just throwing away for a nickel.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Any more questions on bottled water? So, Beth, what did you write down?
I have the question of how many bottles of water are sold in Oregon each year. The point that with this analysis in terms of how much revenue would be generated, we're looking at the wholesale level of it being applied, and then this question of when the deposit goes up to 10 cents, where that extra 5 cents that isn't redeemed by the consumer goes.
Okay, did we capture it? Anything else? And we have a place to get those questions answered, I hope. I try. Okay, let's move to the fourth one, which is a fixed proportion of general and lottery funds to conservation, and that received 8 votes out of the respondents. So let's go to that is on 27. So that's on page 24 and 23 and 24, it looks like. Yeah, 23 and 24. So the questions, additional information that folks identified, how strong would be the need? Could a campaign be launched that would convince people of this worthy passage? What proportion would be necessary? What level of support or opposition? How much average taxpayers pay annually? How burdensome is this tax? What proportion, what suffers as a result that doesn't have access to other kinds of funding? What number is politically feasible? So, what additional information would you like on this one? We know it's politically charged, so we know that. Yes, Tim.
You know, I was the one who proposed this, and it was designed to put the Missouri model on the table. The critical question from my perspective would be what percentage of general fund alone or lottery fund alone or some mix of general fund lottery fund would really be required that in order to accomplish the goal. The reason why I think that's really important is because as you look at what's happened in Missouri has their 1/8 of 1% of sales tax attacked every single time. And every single time they've been able to defend it. The reason they've been able to defend it after all these years with a tax every single year is, yes, we could use that 1/8 of 1% for education or for public safety or for transportation, but how much extra education would we get with 1/8 of 1%? For 1/8 of 1%, we get a world-class conservation organization. And that's the point is that, yes, if you converted that back into general sales tax, you could maybe add a few teachers in the schools, but you wouldn't have a world-class conservation program. So what I wanted us to be able to do is anticipate the second part of this is how politically difficult it'll be. I don't underestimate how politically difficult this will be. Certainly has not been politically easy in Missouri. But it has been defended many, 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 many times for many decades. And the way they defend it is we're taking such a small fraction of the sales tax fund to create a world-class conservation organization. It doesn't make sense to reconvert it. And so that's what I would hope we would find out. I believe $20 million a year for ODFW wouldn't be a very high fraction of our sale, our general fund and lottery fund together. And I believe that is the argument we would use to pass it and then defend it. So that's, so, that's the number one thing I want to really know.
Okay, so you've made a point while it's important, but the question before the group is there any additional information that we need in order to discuss this in June? So is there any, I mean.
I would say the other thing is the political difficulty.
Okay, so that would, we'll hear that in June from our legislators. But is there a certain, the question I would ask is, well, what amount are we talking about, right? I mean, we don't, there's no figure here. I mean, are we looking at 0.8% or 1% or 0.5 or what is the task force? Because we could get the figure on 0.5 gives us this much revenue. 1% gives us this much revenue.
What are the lottery funds? What's the projection and what's sort of been the trend in lottery
up,
dollars?
Lottery's up a little bit, I think.
Over the last 5-10 years.
It went back up, kind of plateaued. So this came up in another thought group who's thinking about how to deal with wildfire costs. And I think the general calculation was done that if it were 1.5% of the unallocated 67% of lottery, that would be at $10 million. 1.5% is about $10 million.
I guess I'd like more information on what's you mentioned an unallocated portion of the lottery.
Yeah, so
how that works.
The portion that hasn't been constitutionally dedicated to the 15% for parks conservation.
And schools.
And then the other allocations that have been allocated to schools. Basically the non-dedicated portion of the lottery, I think total something like, is it 67% of the total lottery funds don't have a...
Then how often is that revisited?
Dedicated allocation.
How often is that revisited for allocation to...
Every biennium.
Well, and it's not that 67% is not going anywhere. It's been put different places by the legislature now, and so every biennium there are different proposals on what to do with lottery.
Senator, which the current of the lottery, as I remember, 18% goes to education by a constitutional amendment, 15% goes to the parks, recreation, and the conservation, and there's another unfortunate 25% is get to some of the laws, and that's tied up for probably the next 20 years. So I think that's 53% to 52%. The remainder, as I remember, is constitutionally dedicated to economic development.
Senator, quick question for you. Is the allocation to state parks constitutional? Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yep. So
started all as economic development, didn't it? And then voter initiatives applied monies to parks and education.
Isn't watershed enhancement funded by lottery? And is there any merit to folding watershed enhancement into ODFW and taking that money and applying it to conservation programs?
So, Senator, you had a question?
Whatever. The only thing I would add to this discussion is that it will probably, you'd have to go straight to the voters for this. Legislature isn't going to do this.
Yeah, well, that's the political realm.
This legislature won't do this.
Okay, Senator Whitsitt, you had a comment too? We're talking over you a little bit there.
No, I was just listening. I did say that one of my original thoughts was it seems to me that Fish and Wildlife and all that,
okay. So Director, I saw your hand up earlier.
Sure. Yeah, I was just going to mention, I think, a valuable piece for you all in the next discussion of this particular item would be just a recap, and I know we shared it with you earlier, but a recap of the general fund that we currently have in the ODFW budget. It is significant. I mean, it's $30.5 million general fund right now in our budget, as well as lottery, which is a relatively small, I think $4.6 million. So I think you should have that in mind. And then to me, this is really, this begs the broader question, not just about general fund funding for ODFW, but for all the natural resource agencies. And, as I think Brett was alluding to, I think we're at 1 or 1.5% of the total general fund right now goes to natural resource agencies. You could have this discussion about the dedicated proportion supporting all the agencies, not just Fish and Wildlife.
So that's the proposal, is a fixed portion of general fund and lottery funds to conservation. So what other questions do we have regarding that? We do. Yep. Yep.
I guess, and I'll change subject slightly, but I had another twist on this dedicated proportion of general fund, and that was if we received general fund match associated with every license that we sold. So right now we get federal fund match associated with every license that we sold. If we had a general fund match, so for every fishing license that we sold or every hunting license that we sold, there was some general fund automatic component that matched those license revenues, that would be, it would be a good model. It would incentivize all of us to continue to improve our sales of licenses, because when we sell more licenses, we get more match. And it would be, in a way, a dedicated proportion of lottery or of a general fund for fish and wildlife conservation. So it's kind of the same concept, but just a little different way to calculate it.
I wonder if there's something else that could be included as kind of an incentive based for non-hunting and angling communities.
Sure. Yeah.
So who was the author of the fixed portion of general fund? Were you, Jim?
So
Kurt's proposing a little bit of a modification to just a proportion. He's proposing some kind of a match.
Well, the reason I don't like that as well is because it doesn't model the Missouri model, and the Missouri model is a famous model, and I think we ought to try to emulate the most successful model in the country. And secondly, as the proportion of hunting and license sales continues to diminish in the future, which I think is inevitable because of the demographics, the general fund match would decrease as well, at a time when one of the criteria our discussion group really proposed is a funding mechanism that raises enough money now and will organically grow over time to meet the need over time, rather than the reverse, which is it inevitably declines over time and you're back around the table trying to fix the problem. So I guess if you're wildly optimistic and think there's going to be quite a growth in hunting and fishing licenses in the future, this would be an alternative. It doesn't seem to me it's a better alternative. It's just another way of dedicating some general fund. The problem is I don't actually believe that. I believe the demographics are against us, and I believe the conservation problems are getting bigger, and I think our ability to solve the problems by tying it to hunting and fishing, A, isn't going to work as well, and B, sends the wrong message anyway. This is about a broad base of conservation getting ready for the future.
Okay, so what do you want to do, Task Force? You want to stay the course with what Jim proposed, or do you want to have an option A and an option B, as what the director proposed, also to discuss in June? So let's go around. Anybody want to weigh in on that?
I'd stick with you, Joe.
Okay, so I see all heads nodding. Stay with the original thinking then. So, okay, so back. Anybody else?
Go. Well, I don't know how you get to general fund unless you do it constitutionally. I don't know whether that's ever been done. The general fund is entirely functional. So each separate legislative assembly will spend it as you see fit. We tried several years ago, I think it was in 2009, in the depths of the recession, and dedicate some funding to the Oregon State Police before they lost half of their officers and so forth. And zero fund has never been dedicated, and the fact that never will be dedicated. So I think that's a good thing now that we're at, right?
Yeah, so that's the June meeting that we're going to discuss that. So is there any questions that you need that we'll have to flesh out for this June meeting regarding this fixed portion of general fund lottery to conservation, and then anything else related to that and the lottery? Yes, Brett?
Only when I read the, Jim, I think this is in the other document around question of is the funding politically insulated. I think your idea would be to pass something through the ballot to protect the funds constitutionally, it sounds like. And my question around this one is, given that whether it's lottery fund or general fund, if it were successful through a ballot, it would pull money away from something else, like the outdoor school ballot initiative that Representative Krieger referred to, and I'm not saying anything pro or against the outdoor school. It's going to pull money away from, lottery money away from economic development. And so this concept inherently involves choosing some ox. We're not creating new money, so somebody's ox has to get gored. And is there an idea of where the legislature should take money away from if it's allocating?
No, I didn't put any proposal in here. What I wanted to do was I wanted to make sure that we had two proposals on the table that were similar to the Missouri model, one that generated new money, and that's Mike's proposal, one that generated a reallocation of current money, that's my proposal. And so strategically, I didn't think either of them would ever pass the legislature. Mm-hmm. I think this kind of a proposal would require a ballot initiative, and this kind of proposal, in order to be secure in particular, would require a constitutional change. And we will think about how difficult versus how adequate either or both of those two proposals are. But I knew we'd get lots of, you know, add to the gas tax and add to the bottle tax and what I call bits and pieces stuff. I wanted to make sure we had two broad-based whole public proposals to choose from, one that reallocated current funds, one that actually put a surcharge and generated new fund. Mike provided the one, I provided the other. I didn't get into any of the details about whose ox would get gored because they didn't have that amount of lottery fund or general fund. And I don't have anything to add to that right now. I think it would be up to the legislature to allocate the remaining amount. But I think voters would vote for it. And I think this problem is big enough, it deserves a big solution. So I want to make sure we had between Mike's proposal and my proposal, two big solutions to look at.
Right, and it's on the table for the June meeting to decide whether we're going to carry it forward or not. So the question before us is there any additional information you need that we need to have staff look into so that when we come back in June to discuss this more about whether we're going to carry this forward or not, you need this question answered or this question answered? Paul?
Maybe I missed it, but the question is what is the percentage?
Yeah, well, I think she wrote that one down. Okay, let me rephrase it. Any additional questions that we need answered?
My answer to that question is whatever percentage boils down to $20 million a year or whatever we decide the final need is.
Okay.
It works backwards. I mean, the percentage of general fund lottery fund is simply the math figuring out how much you free up the money we have to have.
Yep, okay.
But it'll be pretty damn small, I guarantee you that. It'll be a fraction of a percent.
Okay. So, Beth, summarize for us what you heard. Okay.
Yeah. I got to remake my earlier point. It's more complicated than that. We already get general fund, so you have to take that into account when you're calculating. Otherwise,
that was the second. Okay. That was the second one on my list. I've got the recap of the general fund. So what is ODFW currently receiving in general fund to be part of the context for that?
And the concept here was to add $20 million on top of that.
Right. Just wanted to.
I guess the question that I would have is, how do we ensure that that money is actually allocated and can't be diverted at any time? So what does that take?
Relation clause?
We can get an answer to that question, but I mean, it's pretty easy answer, I think. The legislative process allocates that unless it's a constitutional direction that...
So in other words, there's no assurity, certainty that that would happen year after year.
Well, if it's general fund, you know, it's open to everything.
You know, I have been through this, and it depends. If you write a constitutional amendment, and the tighter you write it, the worse it gets in the long run, because you may protect its core purpose, but you just can't visualize, anticipate what the world's going to look like, and that's what drives legislators crazy. Is that's the reason we have legislators, is to judge today's priorities against today's resources, and we're making that decision for people who aren't around at this point. So,
yep.
Isn't it true, though, if you do it legislatively, that you can essentially put language in there like a poison pill where you would require a supermajority to make a change?
Not legislatively.
No?
No. I mean, you pass a law that says in the future will require a supermajority, and then you pass another law, even a budget, that says notwithstanding that law, here's what we're doing.
Yeah.
So the only thing that can bind the legislature is the Constitution.
Constitution. Okay.
By the voters.
Okay, Jim, and then we're going to move on.
I just want to say that it's worked for 40, 50 years in Missouri, and it's never been diverted one single time, and it always got allocated.
You're going to lobby for that in
June. People have figured out how to word it so it can be protected.
Okay, so gone on that one for questions on that one. Okay, so now let's go to the wildlife license plate, which was also in the top, looks like one, two, three, dot, number four. So the license plate is on page, let me get it here.
Done anyways.
What page? Page 21. And it got seven responses. Who was the author of that?
There were multiple.
Okay, so one of the questions that was asked was, what's the fiscal impact of that? So we would need that, Beth, the fiscal impact of a wildlife license plate. And I guess we just have to guess, you know, about other license plates, because we've got multiple license plates out there, how much revenue they bring in. Kurt, you look like you want to say something.
No. I was just making some calculations on my phone, and I was smiling over the small fraction that would actually be.
Yeah, we know it doesn't bring in very much, but it still made number four, so it doesn't bring in a lot of money. That'll be one of the questions that gets answered is, well, how much money does it bring in? And the group may say, well, we want to carry that forward, or no, it's not worth it. So, Carrie, and then the senator.
I was just going to say, when we were working on another vanity plate not very long ago, they're used to running those numbers, and they yeah. give you what every vanity plate is generating. And it's not a huge fiscal note, but it is a symbol, and it does generate some heart out there for the issue. So there's something to be said for that.
I'd like to see the whole list of revenue for every vanity plate.
Oh, yeah, and there's a laundry list of folks that want to get a license plate. So, Senator?
That's what I was going to say is ODOT has that information and when each one expires. And...
Mm-hmm. But okay, yes, Brett, and then Roger?
So question for Senator Edwards or Senator Witt, Senator Rep Krieger, or I don't know if Rep Pelham's on the phone. In your experience with license plate bills, it's happened. It's one of these things that the legislature has done to whether it's cultural trust or vineyards or what have you. What's your sense of the politics and how much do current license plate, vanity plate, or specialty plate holders get cranky about more coming into the system? And I mean, what's your, given this has happened, what's your over under on the thing?
I think so. My sense, and I sat on the Business and Transportation Committee for several sessions, and every session there are a handful of license plate bills. The chairs of those committees usually start from a place of, we are not doing any license plate bills, because that's just an endless string of requests for those. But then, every couple of sessions, a new license plate bill does pass, and usually when it passes, it's either, it's really the pet project of a legislator, and they've just like dedicated everything, to that one license plate, and they've kind of gone around, they've gotten stakeholders on board, and they've mitigated opposition, and the opposition is like, it's not really strong, and it's a bone to throw them, during otherwise very difficult, legislative shutdown negotiations.
Right.
And so, a license plate bill gets green-lighted, and that's
how
license plate bills happen. And they don't generate a lot of money, but
how can you not vote for the Portland Trailblazers, right? I mean, the Trailblazer plate, that's probably, I don't know who lobbied that one, but that made it through the system.
I was Representative Reed, and I voted against it.
Yeah.
Couldn't get it through either.
Yeah, yeah.
Where does the revenue from the salmon plate go?
It goes to OWEB, I think, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I think.
And I have a Crater Lake plate that goes to Crater Lake. So, yeah. So, Roger, you were going to say something?
Yeah, just like on the Crater Lake plate and others, where do those organizations get that contact information? Can they find out who's purchased those? And do they use then that in trying to grow participation or marketing or outreach?
I have no idea how to answer.
Or is that information public to anyone?
So yeah.
And why would we need that information for our decision?
Well, I just think it could be an argument for another benefit for it if you knew folks that were buying those plates because they were interested in wildlife or fish and wildlife. That may be an avenue to then for conservation organizations or others to then go out and try to reach those folks and encourage efforts, or for the department for that matter as well.
Okay, so Beth, what did you write down?
Fiscal impact, list of the revenue that is being generated currently for the various vanity plates that are in existence now, and then Roger's question about whether the purchaser information is ever used by or accessed or is accessible to the organization that it's funding.
Okay, did we capture all the questions that folks have?
The only other one I have is, what is the sexiest non-hunted non-fish species in Oregon that will motivate the public to buy not just a specialty plate, but this specialty plate above and beyond all others?
The Western Meadowlark. How can you be against the state bird? The Western Meadowlark's a beautiful bird. Okay.
That was a joke.
So...
put a beaver on one side and a duck on the other.
Well, there already is an OSU and Oregon plate. I don't know if you know that or not. Yeah. So we're, I mean, just process question. So we're scheduled to be done at 4. We're about halfway through. Do you want to take a 5-minute break, or you want to just keep chowing ahead? Let's start.
I'd keep going.
Keep going? Okay. I see heads nodding. Okay. If you want to get up and get a cookie or a juice, we'll feel free to do that. Okay. Now we're to the beverage deposit, which is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, number 6 in the priority list of priorities, and that one was pretty straightforward. That's the one I got confused on there. So the portion of the beverage deposits. So the questions that additional information, the dollar amount that's generated from deposits now. So that was a question that was asked. Let's see, I guess this one, would it require legislation to implement? Of course, right? Yeah. And then, well, we know who would be against it, so that's a question we'll find out. I mean, any other questions? It's on page 27 of your document for the questions, additional questions that people were asking. And then another question that was asked is, Beth, is how much would an additional 5 cents provide? And then, yeah.
Is there an estimate on what the redemption impact would be when it goes to 10 cents? So if the unclaimed deposit.
Yeah, it'd be 15 then, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a question?
Yeah, it's a question of what, when it goes to 10 cents, do you see the unclaimed deposit number shrink dramatically because the redemption rate is going to increase dramatically?
Yep. Oh, Kenji?
Have they modeled that?
Yeah. So I actually have a couple quick questions, one for any of the legislators. The first question I have is whether there is a difference between a fee and a tax in how those are treated. For example, an environmental impact fee versus a tax on a beverage. Are those two, are they treated differently in the way they go through the process? So the other section was we were talking combining and all that stuff and that how that's supposed to be at June, but I think the 4C actually really doesn't belong in this section because that had to do with the sales tax on beverages, which is like the tax on bottled water instead of a tax on bottle deposits. So I just want to make a note of that.
Okay.
So hence that question about how many bottles of beverages were sold yearly that are subject to the bottle bill. So that's why that question came up.
Okay. Any other questions on this one that we need further information on besides the ones already asked?
Mark, this is Ken Helm on the line.
Welcome, Representative.
Not real. The
So who do we ask on, I mean,
we don't. I think the fellow that runs the bottle drop program, and I think his name is Jeff Anderson. We can get that information from either Chris Parda, who's a lobbyist who represents Oregon Recyclers, or Marge Kapori.
Okay. Yes, Kenji.
The cost of collection on any tax, and that would probably, OLCC probably has a pretty good gander on that.
Do they, is there, do the current retailers take, I don't think they get a fee for that, do they? For
what's the question?
For the bottle deposits?
Do they get a penny of every nickel?
I don't think so.
No. Yeah, I think
no, it's nothing great. But aggravation for us.
Yeah.
It gets the money is collected by you, but then it goes to, back to the distributor?
We get charged by the distributor for every bit of product that we take in. The distributor's charging us.
Yeah, so
it's okay. Then it's up to us to recover it via our sales.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then when somebody brings in empties and we've got to deal with that mess. So, I mean, frankly, I, the program's great, but I hate it.
It's a pain.
Who pays for the collection equipment, the bottle?
Well, we have to deal with it. I have to create storage for it. The guy that's got to get on the phone and try to get the recycling company to come and pick it up, and half the time they never show up. And so then, and then I get problems from the health department because I've got all these cans and bottles sitting around, and I can't get the recyclers to come get them. It's as a retailer, I hate the program. I understand the concept, but I hate it.
Okay, so Beth, what'd you write down?
I have the dollar amount generated from deposits now. How much would an additional 5 cents generate? If there's an estimate on the effect of the deposit going up to 10 cents. And then, just some of the comments around who might have information about what the SG is.
So did we capture it? Anything else? Okay, we're moving on. Next on my list is a surcharge on tax returns, and it received 7 votes, so it's in that top category. Did the author of that want to talk a little bit about that? Is the author?
Well, I authored it.
Okay.
Yeah. I, of course, this thought's been on my mind for a long time, and in kind of a blunt force approach, I realize. But at the end of the day, what I was looking for was what is the mechanism that confronts the issue head on, that being that, all Oregonians are beneficiaries of this beautiful state that we live in, and all Oregonians should contribute to this enjoyment. It's an amenity for living here. And most Oregonians are unaware of the fact that ODFW derives very little bit of their budget from the general fund. And so, we are now all in this room confronted with the fact that their conservation mission needs to be funded. And this is a conservation mission that's largely driven by the people that live here. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to figure out, how do we do this? So, I just thought, well, how do we broadly approach everybody on this issue? And so I thought, well, everybody files a tax return, so let's
most
take
everybody.
And apply, or they're supposed to anyway, right? So let's take and just apply a flat fee, okay? It's printed on the form. It's unavoidable, okay? And you can't adjust it out. It's a fee or a tax or whatever you want to call it, but it's on the tax return. Everybody pays it, and I called it our conservation fund. The offset for a person purchasing a license, I think, is appropriate, because otherwise it just results in a direct double taxation, okay? And the concept here is to create a broad funding mechanism where everybody in the state is participating in paying for that which we enjoy. And so I don't feel it's appropriate for the general license, that would just be a double tax. And as I pointed out in the proposal, that certainly any harvest tags or anything like that, the angler or hunter would still be, obligated to get their harvest tags. But then again, the upside too, if people, and I really want to emphasize this, is so if if everybody has to pay the tax, okay, well, let's call it tax because that's, for lack of a better word, that's what it is. But if there's an offset where if you buy a license, you know, you get to offset that tax, that could very well incentivize many of these people who haven't been buying annual licenses to go ahead and go out and just buy the license. I mean, why not? If you're going to pay the money either way, then why not go out and buy the license? Okay, and if we do get an uptick in people buying licenses, then we enjoy the leverage of additional federal funds from that. So, you know, that kind of sweetens the pot. And then, you know, and there's you know, there's a couple of ways we can look at that too. You know, if one wants to argue that there's sort of a lack of equitability in you know, just hunters and fishermen being able to benefit in such a manner, I would throw it out. Perhaps we could include a state parks pass as a deductible item against that particular fee, which would then engage the non-consumptive public, the people that are out using our parks. You know, so there's a couple of ways that we can approach this. I did go and pull some data. You know, the number that I used of 1.6 million tax returns, that is just personal tax returns that are filed, and that was in 2014. It meets the criteria in that it can organically grow because we know that our population is growing. So, you know, it can grow as our population grows. You know, in terms of how we tweak the number, well, that's kind of what, you know, we're here to do. But as a concept, that this is what I'm thinking.
Okay. So I'm just curious, what are you thinking? If it's 1.6 million tax filers, it's got to be more than a buck.
Oh, I threw out a number of $25, but that's per return. Now think about that. That's per return. Okay, so that's an entire family. They file one return. They pay $25. Okay, or it might be an individual. Again, this is a concept that we can build off of, but it's just per return. Uh-huh. And I didn't even get the numbers on corporate returns. So, you know, that's another number that we could. That's another thing we could throw in there. Take that $25 and cut it down to $15. I don't know, but it's you know, it's a way to broadly distribute the burden of funding our state's conservation mission.
Scott? So I think it's a pretty intriguing idea initially, especially as it brings in a larger funding base. My two questions would be, is it legal? And two, can we actually make sure that 25 other interests don't do the same thing, and all of a sudden when you file your tax form, you have 18 fees? So could we protect it?
That's one question. Is it legal? Okay. Any other questions?
And can we protect it?
And what?
Can we protect it so that every other entity doesn't add a fee on the CAO? Great idea. Let's do that too.
And my question would be whether there are ways to create a couple tiers to make it a little bit more progressive, because it's like the arts tax in Portland. The poorest people in the city pay $35 a year, and the wealthiest people in the city pay $35 a year. It's really hard to
well, and I
justify.
Suggested that maybe we subject to a means test. You know, there'd be a floor.
Or just a couple of tiers, $10, $20, $30.
Sort of like there's different tax rates.
Yeah.
Gary? And
my question would be the impact of excluding hunting and fishing licenses or including parks passes, because I think you're going to pull that number down pretty substantially, and I don't.
Oh, we wish it would, but I don't think it's going to pull it.
Everybody paying for conservation, and then hunters and fishers paying their consumption license fee, and parks people paying their parks usage fee. So I would want to see the nexus between proposed exemptions.
Okay, so that'd be a
so that we could weigh those variables when we're debating it in June.
That'd be a question for the department then: is how much would the reduction be? Of how many hunters and fishers buy licenses that would not be paying the fee because they would be offset by that.
So we'd have those numbers. One thing that we do need to look at too is just some of these, this one may be an issue too, is just looking at potential impact or correlation with federal funds. We just have to make sure that on some of these proposals that there isn't any impact on federal funds.
Oh,
and we
good
need
point.
To do some
yeah.
research on this.
Carl?
Well, I concur. I mean, I think that dismissing the hunters and anglers from paying the fee when they're consuming the resource and they're their
But they're paying through the harvest tags. So the you follow what I'm saying?
I have a point. We're going to debate that in June.
You know, when I said that from going back in January about subsidizing hunters and anglers who, take natural resources in a way that other users don't. You know, the rest of the population don't. Even if we're walking or hiking or swimming someplace, I mean, we're not taking a natural resource in the same way that hunters and anglers do. And I think
we do need to have that conversation, because I could argue very opposite that. I can show you impacts where there's where bicyclists have completely driven wildlife out of the woods, and there's no consumptive activity going on because they're not there. But I think that that's not for today.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's postpone that discussion until June. So you have a question? Okay, you picked up on what I were going. Any other questions that we need for clarification on this proposal that would help us frame the discussion in June? Okay, so seeing none, let's move on then to the next one, which is tourism impact fee, number 20. So who is the author of that would like to speak to it if they want to?
I think it was Mike Finley.
I'm sorry?
I think it was Mike Finley.
Oh, Mike Finley. Okay. Yeah, he did talk to me about that one, too. I'm just trying to find what page it's on here. 30? Okay.
I mean, what's our current tax of $2?
There it is.
Now, the current tax varies around the state. If his idea is a hotel tax, it varies anywhere from 6 to 16%, depending on the local jurisdiction taxes that are levied in addition to the state tax.
No, it wasn't. When he talked to me about it, he was saying he does a lot of traveling in the United States, and he said that there's certain states, and I think it was Colorado or New Mexico, where you get a rental car.
Arizona.
Okay, you get a rental car. They have this fee that they charge for your rental car that goes to Fish and Wildlife. I mean, and people are going to rent their car no matter what. So his point is we need to have people that are coming to our state to recreate. And I'm not lobbying for or against it. I'm just trying to make his point here. We have people that come to our state to recreate when they're here and, see our beautiful scenery and all that stuff. And they should be paying that tourism impact fee. I think that's where he was coming from.
He's answering the question what the current hotel taxes are.
Okay.
How is the tourism impact fee different from the rental car fee then?
I think it is that was the tourism impact fee was the rental car.
The rental car fee's idea 21, which also made the top, I think.
Well, I think we combined them.
And then they're called it separately here. Then there's idea 20, which is tourism impact fee.
Yeah, what I read, Robin.
You're right. I'm sorry.
But I wasn't sure how comprehensive the tourism fee was versus.
Mike wrote in the other document, the compilation dated 5/10 of all the proposals, was tourism impact fee would be based on the Seattle model. $2 a nighter is assessed there. It's a tourism fee plus a room tax of 15.6%.
This is lodging.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So we can discuss them both here, because one's the rental car fee and then the other is both.
It was suggested they be combined.
Yeah. So the additional information we need is how much money would that generate?
Right.
That's one question that we need to answer. And who? We could get that from Travel Oregon, I think, on the motel tax or the lodging tax. And then the rental car, I don't know where we would get that.
I think that one varies, because I know Multnomah County's got its own tax. Probably other counties do.
Yeah, has anybody got an idea who we would ask for that one? how would we get an answer to that question?
There are local level taxes. Airports might be the easiest, because they often will drive almost like a port authority tax within their jurisdictions. And there are fewer airports than there are cities, so that might be one way to get at it. Maybe Dean Runyon Associates, they do the
Oh, yeah, they do, yeah.
Dean Runyon would probably have that.
Okay, got that, Beth? Okay, so kill two there. Any other questions on those? Seeing none, the lottery fund allocation is the next one, number 25, and that got seven votes.
Just a point of clarification, how's that different from Jim's proposal?
I think
lottery only versus lottery plus general? Is that as simple as that?
That's the primary difference. And I think basically, as I read it, the only difference was I was looking for a target amount of money to ODFW, and the percentage would just mathematically evolve from that. This one says 1% dedication, and we just see how much money comes. But, I mean, fundamentally, it's the same question. And I think the analysis will enlighten us as to whether adding general fund or just restricting your lottery fund might change how politically difficult it is, and it might change how stable it is. But the analysis will probably enlighten both.
So the question, Beth, I'm sorry, the question, Beth, is what would 1% of the lottery generate dedicated to department? Any other questions on that one?
Yes, I have one. What is the ratio of, you know, the lottery revenues are distributed, I think it's 50% into the prize pool and 50% into the lottery fund. Is that in the Constitution, that ratio? Because there could be new revenue there, so to speak, that doesn't affect other programs, but does affect ultimately the prize pool.
Hmm. That's an interesting angle.
I don't know the answer.
What was the question again?
You shrink the prize pool to increase the fund.
I don't know what. It may be. I don't know.
Okay, so we'll ask that question. Any other questions on this one? So, Beth, what did you write down on that one?
What 1% dedicated lottery funds amounts to. And then first question about whether or not the state prize pool and the funds available for other purposes is in
the Okay. So then the last one that I show, and just the charts are a little bit confusing here, but the last one that I show is 1% for Oregon's Wildlife, a voluntary market-based funding program, and that got six votes. Who was the author of that one?
The author was John Goodell from the, but I submitted it on his behalf, okay. So.
Go ahead.
Do we want to pull him up to explain it further, or do you want me to try to take a crack at it? I think he'd do a better job.
Okay.
So this, you know, as the process of listening to a lot of the debate, this idea came along the lines of, given that Oregon is unique in potentially its tax history or lack thereof, that maybe a market-based approach, kind of similar to Patagonia's 1% for the planet, which has now evolved into a separate NGO, that it's a marketplace approach where businesses from tourism to agricultural products like fruit, packaged fruit, frozen fruit, to outdoor gear vendors or manufacturers can voluntarily adopt this program that might be administered by a third-party NGO, and it would be a voluntary thing, a marketplace thing. And so if you're online and you live in Maryland, or if you live in Oregon and you'd be buying, say, a pair of binoculars from a company in Oregon or a jacket, maybe on that website by the add to cart, there's a little icon that says 1% for Oregon's Wildlife. You could click on that, you could learn more about the program. But I think, you know, potentially consumers would start to, you know, would start to make those choices potentially, and it might grow. So I put in the proposal a very, very modest calculation based on those various industries that I listed. That didn't look very good because it was only about 5% participation, very small participation. But if you think of this as potentially growing in the marketplace, if it was up to, say, 20 to 30% participation, the numbers would be there. So it's just a thought that I had about the digestibility of this subject politically in Oregon, and maybe this voluntary marketplace solution could be viable. And as such, maybe there's a way to have a fish and game app so I can buy a conservation stamp or a conservation donation as a non-hunting fishing person, although I hunt and fish. If I wasn't, I could buy this app or buy this stamp or app, or a hunter could have the app and have those things, a verification of purchase, so that when you go to buy something, potentially there's a way to say, I've already got the ODFW conservation stamp, therefore I'm exempt from this 1%, which was another side proposal from that other. And then the other thing in there I mentioned was maybe there's tax incentives, and I don't know if this is even possible, to offer a tax incentive to organizations that want to participate in this program. So anyway, that was what it was about. It's based on the 1% for the planet model, but the 1% for the planet folks have indicated to me about 3 years ago when I was discussing this with some outdoor industry folks, was that they were, the 1% for the planet people feel like this concept is sort of proprietary, and they even said to the effect of like, well, we'd see that as trademark infringement, but so maybe there's a need to approach them about it, because what they do, their model is they get the 1%, they get vendors or companies, and they get NGOs, and they help funnel money from the 1% for the planet to the NGO, and it's kind of done not in a dedicated way. And so it's a different model to say that this would actually be dedicated to an agency.
It's intriguing, but I wonder if folks who are clicking and allocating 1% would understand that their money might go to deferred maintenance and not to wildlife.
Yeah, and that's something that I think...
So I think that's something to be thoughtful of.
It could be something you have to explain, but it also could be an opportunity with, say, some sort of app that relates to purchases, that you could maybe broaden the ability of people to contribute to parts of the conservation strategy. So if I'm a birder and I want to contribute to the avian part of the conservation strategy, maybe there's a way to do that. That is sort of like on the fly, I'm about to make a purchase, you can say, I want to give 20% of this purchase to the avian conservation strategy. So.
This would be, it looks like, through a third-party foundation. We're not actually, we don't have a legislative proposal here.
Well, I know that there's two components to it. There's the idea of this marketplace thing that could be a third party, or it could be done vis-a-vis a government agency, but then there's also the idea of a tax incentive. So I don't know enough about tax incentives to go further than that, but I realize that this is a little bit of a different alternative proposal that...
So what questions does the task force have that we would need to answer to get us further information, discuss it in June? Jim?
I would be interested in what the Outdoor Industry Association's reaction to this would be. See how this would be reacted to by our outdoor retailers here in Oregon.
So we would ask, who's the lobbyist for that group? Scott is?
No. I mean, I could definitely talk to Peter. He's on the board.
Okay.
And, we definitely could keep OIA informed. I'm sure they have an opinion. I think also 1% for the Planet is a great organization. They don't necessarily funnel donations through. What they do is they document what companies are doing. So they're pretty broad in what they define as for the planet, because they're trying to build their membership. So I think a key question would be, what is conservation, or what does this 1% actually cover? Because that's always been a question with 1% for the planet, because in some cases they're so broad that they've had criticism that you're just bringing in people to build your numbers, but have you really documented their donations? Because in fact, the donations don't go through them.
So who would we ask that question to?
I think it would be up to us. Like, what are we trying to...
What would we dedicate it to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Once again, that's my point. I mean, is it 1% for the conservation strategy?
Yeah, it would be, in this case, 1% for ODFW's implementation of the strategy, or...
Not for deferred comp, or...
Well, I think it could be. I think it could be whatever you decide is the best way to... where the revenue goes and how it goes. I think there's ways to define that and break that down for the consumer, but I'm not necessarily saying it shouldn't be to deferred maintenance, but that I think that there's a way in a marketplace setting to maybe define those different things and give people choices. So.
I think for further background before June, and maybe Roger, you can research this a bit, but there's an organization called 1% for Conservation. It was started by the director of marketing for Sitka, which is an outdoor sporting, you know, equipment company or a apparel company. And what he's done is he's gone to different organizations in the hunting world and said, we know you give a lot of money to conservation already. If you're doing at least 1% of revenues, we'll allow you to join this club. We'll charge you a fee to join the club, and then you can use that as a badge to help sell your product. And so he's done some protection around those, that naming piece. He's talked to the people from 1% of the planet to get permission to do that. So they were willing to give him permission to do that, but whatever we did, we wouldn't want to necessarily have a competing brand, if you will. And he's probably 2 years along the road towards that. And I can forward you a little bit of information that he gave us to consider. But
so you've put in some figures here.
Right.
So were those... Did you just grab them? Or
I looked up different industry sectors in Oregon on, and I forget the difference. There were government sites that looked at, say, processed fruit, you know, the total revenue from that, and then calculated the percentages based on that. If 5% of those sales, or sort of 5% of those products incorporated the 1% label, and it was 1% of that 5% would equal this. And so I sort of took very modest participation figures, like 5%, 10%, for, I believe it was the wine industry, the outdoor gear industry in Oregon, the wine industry in Oregon, and then the fruit, processed fruit industry in Oregon. I think, I don't know if there was another one on there.
Yeah, the beer industry.
Beer.
You're too low on that one, I think. So.
But those were taking into account, like, the first couple years of modest participation. But what I think is interesting about it is that it could go up to 20 or 30%. Participation, which could be some huge numbers.
Okay, so any other questions that we would need for clarification on that one that would help us to discuss that in June?
I think just maybe on the legislative end, is with this concept, where do the funds, what's the collection entity? I mean, how do all these disparate voluntary donations get collected and rolled up, and then can they be received? Who does the rolling up, and then can they be received by the agency into whatever the fund is? Is it an existing fund? Or
yeah, good question.
We already have statutory authority to accept donations. I mean, not a problem.
Yeah. We just need limitation
to spend it.
Oh, it's going crazy.
But we can accept it.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. That's tier one. Kenji?
So if we have any questions that we didn't ask when the little segment came up, is now a good time to ask them, or should we wait till later?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So the question that I have is on Proposal 4C. I just want to find out whether state parks would be interested in such a proposal and whether they'd be interested in working on it, because a portion of the funding goes to state parks on that proposal.
Kenji, 4C was one you, I think you said it doesn't really belong lumped into the other 4A and 4B.
Yeah, it's more akin to the bottled water, but it expands the products that it's applicable to.
Yeah. So we could ask.
Thank you.
I have a follow-up question too, and it's sort of around the nexus between the discussion on the marijuana taxes and the discussion on the general plus lottery fund percentage. And that is, given that we have this new tax resource in the marijuana tax and the legislature is already sort of apportioned out where it will go, is there a basic assumption that it's a net gain in every case, or will there be any relief of the general fund money that has already been going to the people who will now receive the marijuana tax to provide any kind of softening in that? So I'm guessing that the proponents to receive marijuana tax want everything they've been getting, plus they want the marijuana tax. I mean, I totally get that's where they would be coming from. But the legislature has asked us to help solve the conservation problem. And so my question would be, is there any give in terms of the base level of funding that all of these recipients that have already been identified for the marijuana tax, is there any, does that help with the argument of some kind of baseline additional funding coming out of the general fund and or the lottery fund? Does that make sense? I don't know how we answer that question.
Yeah, I was just trying to think, well, how do we get that answer?
They've been in the same boat we have, and basically this new revenue is just making them whole or closer to whole.
I think also important context is, depending upon what happens with IP 28 in the fall, and that's the corporate tax measure, we know that status quo, we are looking at a $1.3 billion cut out of the budget, the general fund budget, next legislative session, at least $1.3 billion. Could be higher, could be 1.5, could be 2. So I'm just, you know, projecting forward in that type of atmosphere. And that's just one session. I mean, that's not necessarily every session, but at least during that session, there, you know, the discussion about what's baseline and what's above and beyond, and it's like it's all just filling a hole, you know. So just background information. Right. So
important. Yep.
Here's another question along the marijuana tax. One thing that I'd be interested in finding out is through the California Department of Fish and Wildlife is to find out how much marijuana grows actually impact water quality and how much they use.
How would we get that information?
California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
They have that answer?
Yeah.
There's reports on that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Huh.
It's pretty substantial in certain areas.
And how does that frame?
That frames the nexus.
Yeah.
Okay, the nexus discussion. Okay. Okay, anything else? So we've got the questions that need to be answered, and so Beth and Roger have got their work cut out for them to get us all this information, and hopefully, you know, they've captured it all, and we can get it in a format. We'll get it back out to you in probably late this month or early June, and then the goal would be for our June meeting is that we would go through all that information for those proposals, see if there's any more clarifying questions. And then at that meeting, we would start the process of saying, okay, what's going to stick? What's not going to stick? We look at it, we use our criteria, we use the political feasibility, the nexus, and the criteria that we used when we developed all of our charts. You know, is the funding stable, flexible? Is the funding diverse? Does it enhance engagement? Is the funding cost effective? All those things. And we sit down as a group and say, okay, this is the ones we're going to propose to the legislature in September, and we start through that process. So,
yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking that one of the things that will factor into our conversation in June will be how likely is it that the voters would approve this? I mean, how likely is it the legislature to approve this? And if we went to Plan B, which was some kind of an initiative and went directly mm-hmm. to the voters, how likely is it the voters would
It might be one,
this?
Yeah.
It would be beautiful to have some polling information. You know, I wish from our survey we had polling information that would kind of inform us. I personally believe some of these things.
Well, our plan is to do polling. We don't have the funding source for it quite yet. Contingent upon the funding, we were going to take these proposals and put them out to a poll, a statistically valid poll, and say, you know, we're going to have to do it in a format that's pretty simple, but saying, would you support this or would you not support it? No. So
is it likely that we might have that by June?
No.
We don't have the funding yet.
It won't inform our discussion in June, but it would presumably inform our discussion later in the fall.
Yeah.
As we move toward a campaign. And either a campaign to convince the legislature or a campaign to given up on the legislature and a campaign to convince voters.
Yeah, and this is just me thinking, but, you know, once we narrow it down to what I'll call the vital few, then that's the ones we would do the polling for.
Okay.
And if I was a legislator, you know, I'd say, okay, the task force has done their due diligence. We've done this. I'm not sure the public will support that. Well, wait a minute. We've got a polling done by the public, and here's what the public thinks. So the legislature's going to go, well, I represent all these folks, and it looks like, you know, they, on a statistically valid, they support this. So I can go back to my constituency and say, I have the task force opinion, I have a public opinion, and I can carry this or I not. So let's go. Brett had his hand up first, and then Merrill.
I think the assumption, Jim, that we're under is task force works to narrow down, as we have been, the ideas and put some more definition to the ideas in terms of what the funds will be used for, and the two work group ideas are focused on that. In the report that goes to the legislature out of the task force in September, articulates where we've landed, and doesn't just have to be one idea. There could be a spectrum of ideas. And the trick in all this is the timing with, I think the general assumption is something comes into the legislature and it's for the legislature to decide what's right and if it's right at all. And if it's not right for a legislative up or down vote, is it right for a referendum or a referral to a ballot measure? And I would imagine that's where the, informing the legislature on where the public is where the polling becomes critical. But some of the trick in all this is lining up placeholders or vehicles for different legislative concepts in a timely way with polling.
So for the purposes of June, we're just going to have to make a judgment as to what we think is going to be supportable or not.
Yeah. Yeah,
and a judgment about the relative political difficulty.
Well, and then we kind of decided that I think the task force said, well, we could do polling too if we could get the funding for it. So I think, you know, that's what we said. Well, this will give us some extra teeth. So before you get there, I gotta say something before I forget, because I'm at the age where if I don't say it right away, I forget it. So the this is me talking. So if you disagree with it, we need to hear that. So and I haven't talked to the executive committee about this, but so in June the thinking was, originally the thinking is that we would break into two subgroups and we would break out these proposals and we would start through that by those subgroups. So I'm thinking that it is so powerful to have the entire group, and I know we've got a time issue here, but it's so powerful to have our entire group discuss these, because we get pros and cons and back and forth. And I'm going to lobby, and I may get overruled, but I'd like to lobby that we stay as an entire group and work these proposals, one, instead of breaking into a subgroup, and then the subgroup come back and report to the big group, and the big group says, well, wait a minute, I've got a question on this. And then, so, I'm looking at the smileys over here. So I could go either way.
I'm with you. I agree with you.
So yeah. Wait a minute, Roger's jumping.
what I think staff was thinking about was the work groups would be focused on the full task force would be talking about the funding proposals. The work groups were going to be focused on those program areas or those focus areas, the conservation efforts and the branding and marketing.
Yeah, we would break into that.
But then there would be those groups would also have a discussion of some of the other items that are in the task force assignment list in terms of leveraging funding and opportunities for partnerships and all that would be part of those work group discussions. So the plan was that Jim had was we would have the full task force spend time working on these funding proposals and hash these out so that we'd have something to move forward with, and then the work groups would take advantage of everybody being here to have that those discussions rather than trying to set up separate work group sessions.
Thanks for the clarification. But then so we would do that. I don't know if we'll figure out whether we'll do that in June, but to me it seems like we ought to do the proposals first, get those done, and then break into our groups, because we'd have July and August. And
Can we talk about how that June meeting is going to be structured, too, in terms of answering our questions and then advocacy or opposition to some of these proposals? Because we probably all feel like we want to champion some and obliterate others. So how are we going to work through that?
Pursuant to that, I have kind of a question that I think might be somewhat apropos. In going through the proposals, only about half the participants, it would seem, tested their proposal against the established criteria. And we spent quite a bit of time working on that criteria. And I think the criteria is very important. And I don't understand, you know, it seems to me that's important for everybody to take a look at and to evaluate each of these proposals against the criteria that we all agreed upon.
Well, I think the ones that we did evaluate,
I'm looking at it right now. I'm seeing a whole bunch of them don't have.
Yeah, but those are the ones we didn't deal with.
Well, I want to jump in because I'm looking back at the principles and the goals and a couple things. I'm not convinced that the poll that's currently happening now is going to provide us with information and qualitative and quantitative data about new audiences, diverse and underserved communities. That's not what the polling's going to do at this point. And we really didn't, to your point, for the principals, look at the funding strategies and consider how diverse and underserved communities would benefit from fish, wildlife, and habitat. And perhaps that's for the next step when we break out in groups and specifically have a subcommittee look at the proposals and and look at the principles and connect those two. I mean, is that what you're thinking, Mark? Or
yes.
I just want to bring that daylight that again.
I know that's a major issue with you, major thrust with you, and totally understand.
But specifically about the polling, too.
What we were thinking of, and this is generally, there are two lenses. There's the what and the how, and it's a little bit challenging because the how are we going to fund the what? We're talking about all these funding mechanisms, and that's the how right now. And so, in some ways, we're putting all these thoughts and ideas on funding mechanisms out there before we've clearly distilled the what. And the work groups were intended to get into the what. I mean, what specifically would we use new money to do? And there's the conservation work group breakout, and there's the engagement or funding and the outdoors breakout related to marketing, equity, diverse communities, and the non-conservation program work. So that's how we were generally thinking about it, and I think if we use June, I think June is too early to get to Mike Herbel's point. I think all the different funding ideas do need to be evaluated against the criteria. And then there's the info that Beth, you've jotted down that we're going to need to work with LFO, LRO, and other agencies potentially to bring back information on that. And so I don't know that we can get it all done by June. I guess that's, I'm trying to think about staying to the plan of what we're using. Getting into the work group discussions around the what specifically are we using?
Okay, so if we
while we're developing the additional information on the how, which are these?
So if we don't have the questions answered by the June meeting, we'll do the work groups. If we have the questions answered, we'll do the proposals. Is that what I'm hearing? Okay. I was just trying to push us a little bit.
It's pretty quick. I think there are a lot of other people that are going to be involved in this.
Okay, so probably the thinking is in June we'd be doing the work groups then and breaking into there. And we haven't talked to Jim yet, so
barring him, you know, getting married and deciding to stay in some other country.
But Brett, what I heard was using the polling results to support a constituency base that believes in this funding mechanism. But what I'm sharing, what I believe from the from the survey scope and the questions is we're still going to miss, we're going to still potentially miss new audiences and non-traditional audiences from that polling, from that polling, from that scope, from that survey scope and that process.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah. And I think when we go, assuming we get funding to go back out with polling on certain ideas and certain funding sources, I think we've got to figure out how to address that.
Kenji?
So when in the process do we engage with outside groups that could be potentially negatively impacted? For example, mine, key players would be the Northwest Grocery Association, Associated Oregon Industries, Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors. Do we solicit comments from them, or would they just go through the process and just take a look at it at the end? Is there a way to get them engaged? Because if you engage them early enough in the process and you make them buy into it, makes it a lot easier on the back end. So is there going to be an opportunity for that, or is that even part of the discussion?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to think what meeting I said this, but, you know, the key to all this is that we've got to take our hats off as I'm only out for this and I don't care about anything else, I'm for this. If we want to fund ODF&W for long-term sustainability, we may not get exactly what my constituency wants or this constituency wants, but if our goal is to provide long-term funding stability, we've got to, as entities, you've got to talk to your groups and say, this is what we came up with, this is what our priorities are. It may not be perfect, but we agreed that we want to support this. And so we've got to have you out talking to your constituencies and saying, for long-term funding sustainability, we may not get everything we're after, but we got to go to our legislators and get them to support this. So we're going to go down in flames if we have some groups coming in from the side and saying, well, I participated, but I don't like it. You know, if I was a legislator, you know, if I'm Senator Edwards, I got to have everybody lined up and saying, we support this, we support this, we support this. Not perfect by any means, but my constituency supports this. That's what carries the weight.
At our last discussion group that we always have before these meetings, our conversation started to go beyond just getting our groups to support it, thinking about who has the power in Oregon to either put a green light on an idea or kill it. Major business interests. We have major business organizations in this state that if they're behind it, it has a fair chance of being influential in the legislature and helping to fund a campaign that would convince voters to do it. Major business interests are opposed to it, and it's probably dead. So it's not just a matter of the people who have groups that are represented in the diversity around this table. There are key power players in Oregon who we need to not surprise. So our group encouraged me and Mike and some others to come here and say, let's start thinking about the campaign. Start thinking about the campaign that we would want to do in the fall. Let's assume we've got an elegant, good nexus, sufficient idea, you know, meets all our criteria. Who would we want to go out and pitch this to? The Oregonian Editorial Board, the Associated Oregon Industries. I mean, people like that. If they're going to support this, why is it important to them to have a good conservation strategy well implemented in Oregon? What other things would be on their mind? What would they say back to us? You change the idea in this manner, we'll support it. I mean, all of that is what a campaign does. So I think what Kenji's raising is, are we going to finish sometime soon sorting out our primary idea and start running the idea past power players in Oregon whose support we have to have in order to get it off the pad before it's all finalized and the report's published.
Well, Bill Moreau's already weighed in.
It's not smart to do it, finalize it all.
Exactly.
And, oh, everybody's got their signature on it. Well, this is it.
Here it
is. And 12 of the power players say, well, excuse me, but that's dead.
I think that's one of the key lessons from the proposal that came from the Blue Ribbon panel is they reached out to oil and gas industry, who you might not necessarily imagine would be your proponent but those guys are already paying a tax. They need a marketing story about conservation. This provided one that they're already paying for. They may not have thought of that as a great solution initially, but until you talk to those people, you may not see that nexus that makes the most sense. And I don't think that they would have ever came up with a solution had they not incorporated those interests.
So when we talk to the recreation industry clothing manufacturers.
Well, definitely, we could definitely, I know the OIA would definitely have a, I mean, because the OIA is going to think of it from a couple ways. It's a little different when you're talking federal versus state, because then you're looking at precedent being set that could be replicated 50 times, whereas federal is one. But there would definitely
perhaps we could just have a conversation around the table in June about who we think the most influential people would be that we would want to be supporting our initiative by first of the year, and think about how we would reach out to them.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how we could run ideas by them. Just trial balloon a few things just to see if this thing's dead in the water or this thing's got legs before it gets too finalized.
And I would just say the timing and who you talk to is really important there, because if you go talk to the people who are likely to oppose you early on, they quite likely will kill this thing before it ever leaves the room. And not that these are not all nice people, but they're all looking out for their interests there, and a lot of interests are probably tracking this. They may or may not be sitting in the room, but you know, it's a small
world. We know
world.
How it works. And nothing's probably going to happen until after November anyway, so. But we've only got three more meetings, essentially, June, July, and August. And our report has to be ready by September. So we've got our work cut out for us. So, any other comments? So I guess the executive group will talk, but what the thinking is now, changed, is that probably the June meeting, we won't have the answers to all the questions. So we'll probably do the work groups in June, and then we'll be ready to go in July to do the proposals. But if we have the questions answered for June, we would do that and then continue with the work groups, if everybody's okay with that. Okay.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Good point. Yep. Okay. Anything else for the task force? Okay. We'll open up public comment. Public comments open? Yes, sir. Could you introduce yourself for the record again, please?
Yes, Fergus McLean. Yeah. I guess it's really outside the scope of the task force, but it seems like appropriate to consider why it is this agency is in so much trouble and whether throwing money at it is really a solution. To me, the problem with this agency is it's a commodity-related agency. It's not an environmental agency. It's not an ecological agency. You said in your meeting materials you have not done the surveys. You don't have a handle on the wildlife. You're into selling them for hunting licenses, and that's why you're dying.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Okay, our next meeting is June.
I actually have something this has been on my mind, Kurt, and I was wondering if this is something that your staff could look into for the next meeting or perhaps send this out. I would like to know really specifically what kind of conservation education the department is looking to do. Is it, you know, I recognize there's hunting and fishing education. Is it much broader than that? Really, how far and deep would that outdoor education or environmental education component go? And you could share with me and others now if you have an idea or if you want to gather some more information about that.
Sure. So I just want to clarify, you're talking about in the program that we laid out to you last meeting.
Yeah, you had education, and I think environmental education. I mean, that's really a broad suite. So what are you really talking about?
We've had a number of ideas, but I think we're certainly interested in feedback, and we would be reaching out to all the affected communities to ask them what kind of a program it is that they want. So we don't have any pre-decisional program designed. We would be looking to you all and others to really help us frame that in the future.
Beryl, are you asking for OEMW to come back with, here's the education that we're doing, that staff are doing now, here are the types of things we're doing? Because I think part of the task of the work group number two around connecting with Oregon, have this conversation about what are the gaps, what is the agency not doing that work the task force members want the agency to be doing, and is that, how does that look? Is that through partnerships? Is that through program development, or what?
Yeah, that's along the lines that I'm thinking. I mean, you had mentioned a grant program, and I know you have some sort of grant program, and so would one idea be, you know, funding, and then a grant program distributes funding to the NGO sector to actually implement environmental education programs? Because frankly, honestly, I'm on the fence right now as to whether the agency should really be doing environmental education and outdoor education and recreation programs that so many other organizations around the state are currently doing. And is that the best use for these funds? And I wanted to know, is that a mandate? Because it's in the title of what the task force is looking at, right? So yeah. I'm not convinced that that is where funding should be put, as opposed to biologists and wildlife managers who really can get the bigger science questions answered,
sure.
Given that there's so many really wonderful programs that are going on there. Sorry.
That must be a cue.
Yeah.
So I think
I just would want more information.
That's good feedback. And one of the things, you know, we get requests. I think I might have mentioned this in my previous discussion, but we get requests from educational institutions, schools, grade schools, middle schools, and to some degree high schools all the time, wanting someone to come and talk to their class about pick the topic, whether it be salmonids or native neotropical birds, whatever it may be. And we try our best to fulfill those requests. Many times we can't because we don't have the bandwidth. But our vision was, rather than right now, it's kind of, for us, it's a sit back and wait for them to come to us. And we think it would be better for us to be proactive in actually engaging with these groups to help them learn about Oregon's important wildlife. But we're open to suggestions. I think I also mentioned that we rely on wildlife rehabilitators right now. They're in large part nonprofits, and we really think that a grant program to help them with operational expenses is an important component moving forward.
And yeah.
So we have those ideas. So we have a lot of ideas, but we don't have any pre-designed educational plan in place.
Okay.
Maybe to clarify, the exercise we went through and coming up with the number that Kurt laid out was, I mean, that was basically, it was what would it take in terms of staffing, but and how, you know, what were the resources that were needed, but how that actually gets deployed and what that looks like, that's part of what would have to be determined. But one thing that we did, the discussion we did have internally, is that even grants programs and volunteer management, those type of efforts require some staffing.
Sure.
To manage as well. It doesn't happen without staffing, and just loading that onto existing staff it creates some challenges as well. So that's something that we need to take into account.
Well, you know, I'm not knocking duplication when it's warranted, but I am knocking duplication when it's a waste of resources, and there are groups that can whose function is to do those kinds of programs, and they do it really well, and they're a lean organization and don't have the kind of overhead that an agency has.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, and I don't get this paper, but the Salem Statesman Journal had a picture of Roger Furman's daughter on the front page. What's on the front page?
Sports section.
Sports page. She's some kind of great athlete, I understand. So she's a track star.
Oh, that was
So he's got autographed copies if you'd like one to take home with you.
Oh, I did.
Wow. Be very embarrassed now.
I think that's great. You should be proud. Jim.
Well, I think before we wrap up, we ought to give a hand to the staff. We have given them a gigantic pile of work to do. And
poor Beth. She's
doing great work for us.
100%.
Okay, we are going to talk this over, but we may try to accomplish as much as we can. We're scheduled from 1 to 4 on June 8th, I think it is, and maybe we'll try it for 10 to try to get through as much as we can to get, since we're all here anyway.
And I would offer, let's meet at 10, and let's see how close we would come to narrowing our thoughts, just arguing back and forth and discussing criteria and the.
Well, but we may be just
even
doing
if we didn't have every piece of our analysis. Maybe we already know enough to know that some of these tidbit examples should be left aside, and some of the bigger examples. That's what I would argue. Some others would say, "Jim, you're dreaming. Return to this planet and let's do what's doable." Yeah. So you know, having that kind of conversation, getting us started toward narrowing our ideas earlier than later would be good.
Okay. Hear you clearly. So I'm going to be talking to the House Ag and Natural Resource Committee, as Beth said earlier, on Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. You're welcome to join us. If not, you can watch it on the legislative website. I'm just going to give us an overview of what we are doing and hopefully answer any questions that they might have about the committee's work. So because we're working for them, we're doing this on their behalf. So, Bruce?
Yeah, I was just confused on the next meeting, what time it starts, because I had 10
I have one,
calendar,
but I think, do you want to do it at 10?
I had 10.
Yeah, okay.
10.
Okay.
Okay, great. Anything else come before us? If not, we're adjourned.
What
come before us? If not, we're adjourned.